we start with our meeting. Firstly, I want to start by heartily welcoming Honorable Minister and your team, Honorable Kadimeng, for heeding our request to meet this morning at this time, date, and venue. From my side, I need to say that it is always good to engage with this department. This department is one of the most important departments in this country. It is a cooperative governance department that deals with issues of cooperative governance, intergovernmental relations, coordination, and now the district development model. It is a department that provides services and basic services for that matter to our people. It is a department that is doing this because in terms of promoting developmental local government and achieving our own developmental objectives, this is the department we're talking about. It also has a critical component of traditional affairs. Our country is firmly based and rooted on traditional governance, leadership, and authority. And it's also a platform where interface is happening. And of course, we have an element of MISA to improve the infrastructure challenges that are facing our country. I'm making this special focus because there's been a lot of changes at the political level of this department. Honorable Minister joined us 2 years ago almost as a deputy minister. The previous deputy minister had gone, and we're meeting today when the former deputy minister is now our boss, is now our minister, is the executive authority of the department. We also have a new deputy minister. He indicated that he's on his way to this meeting, or he's already here to the meeting. Welcome, Honorable Deputy Minister. I must say this point. 3 years ago, we started holding our meetings via visual. And there was a necessity, an imperative for us to do that. It was precisely because of the COVID-19 imperatives. Now that the systems are going, we must be fully fledged back to normal. We must work. We must do our work very diligently. And I must say, after such a long time, we are congregating in the way that we have to receive the APP, the annual performance plan of the department, as well as the budget, and we want to engage with those in a robust way, in a way that understand the nature, the character, and the magnitude of the challenges facing this area of work that we are dealing with. But I must express a concern that members of parliament themselves are not attending as they should. There is a bit of reluctance to have physical meetings. I've said the department, the portfolio that I chair, the committee that I chair, we're doing it physical. there must be extraordinary strenuous circumstances that will make us not to have our meetings physical. Other than that, Parliament must function. We are at the final leg of this term. We need to consolidate the medium strategic framework of the department. We need to make a proper assessment of where the department is in terms of the mandate of this new administration, the sixth mandate, to assess properly whether or not we have accomplished our own predetermined objectives. We too as Parliament, in the final analysis, we need to produce what is called a legacy report that spells out in precision our work over the intervening period, whether we made great strides in respect of lawmaking, in respect of monitoring, in respect of oversight, in respect of public participation, and any important role that Parliament plays. We need to also do that. This issue is mutually inclusive, and therefore we need to work together and at the end of the day produce results that will make an indelible contribution to the people that we serve, the people that expect too much from us as public representatives. Now, quickly I want to deal with the apologies. I've received two apologies, one apology from Honorable Dlamini, and the second one is from Honorable Bartlett. Last week they were also not here. As the chair, I'm going to follow up their non-attendance of our meetings and check precisely what could be the problem. But as we said, we are full force. And for the implication of the future perspective, Honorable Minister, know that our meeting will be physical unless there are circumstances that me and you will discuss outside this meeting to say what is happening, and we talk. We are civil, we are human, we are rational, we understand. Those are the two apologies. I'm going to hand over to you, Honorable Minister, to check whether is there any precise apology, but I can see that you are full blown, you are fully represented, and as I know some of the faces here, I can see that the full complement is here, which is very good, because we want to engage with you on matters that are on our table this morning. Just checking with you before we proceed.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, and good morning to Honorable Members, to the COPTA team as well, DM. Honorable Chair, we have one apology that comes from DM Dow. As you correctly indicated, we are all here. Somebody had to remain at home to make sure that the rooms are running as well. He is currently preparing for an engagement session which we'll be having with regard to the transitional arrangements in the department. So DM Dow will not be in attendance, but the entire team is here. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that. I have structured how we must proceed forward. We are going to receive three presentations, and with all intents and purposes, they are not the same. MISA is the smallest part of your submission today. It is followed by traditional affairs, which is very important, but it's not as big as COPTA. My proposal is that it's 10:15. We should be done at least here by 1:00, at least, at the most. Now, I propose that we must take 1 hour 15 minutes for cooperative governance. That will include your 20 minutes of presentation and the rest of members engaging with that presentation. After that, we would do about 45 to 50 minutes for traditional affairs. There are a lot of issues that are emerging from the traditional affairs space. We want to get engaged and be seized with those issues as well. And the rest, about 35 minutes or so, if my calculations are correct, or 45 minutes too, will be dedicated to MISA. Luckily, the team of MISA has been intact for some time now, with changes there and there. And coming to this meeting, I can rest assure you, members have prepared themselves, and they know the issues that are on the table, and they would like to engage you with those issues as well. If you allow, you agree, I think this is how we must proceed forward. I saw Honorable Smith.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Firstly, my apology for being a bit late. I underestimated the traffic this morning. Honorable Chair, I totally agree with you on the issue of attendance of members, and it's something that we must take serious, and maybe write to members if they don't attend. The second thing, Chair, I just want to correct you, because I heard you say the minister is our boss. The minister is the political head of the department, not my boss. So if I can just correct that, we are here to keep the executive accountable, so that we just understand.
All that sense.
The second matter on the department is although I appreciate that everybody attends, but considering the financial condition of our country, we should also evaluate in terms of who do we really need to have in this meeting and who not. Because obviously there's a cost implication to have everybody in this meeting from the department. So if the minister can please consider that in the future, to bring the necessary support staff, but maybe it's not necessary to bring each and every person, because if we calculate all the costs to get people the accommodation, all of that, it's quite a big cost to the country that we really can't afford at this stage. Thank you.
Just say something on the two issues you raised. Yes, I retract that. It's okay. But given the nature of the fact that we women must take their rightful positions, and I say it with respect that, he's in charge, and I know she's in charge in that sense, not anything else. The second one is that you'll be shocked. We're doing three departments, three fully fledged departments, not a single entity, and I don't want anything to slip out of our fingers here. And I know that in Parliament there is a framework that is determined. These meetings come once a year. We want to carefully listen to their APPs, and we don't want anyone to be absent. And not, I understand what you say, but I look at it from that particular context. But this can be a matter that we look at, we discuss, and we make it in such a way that it will help us to get the answers that we want. It will help us to make the follow-ups that we want. For me, that is also important. We balance, checks and balances. Yeah. With that in mind, Honorable Minister, we are in your hands. Maybe, as I said, 20, 25 minutes for your presentation on cooperative governance, and allow us more time to engage, because this is an area that is extremely problematic in the country. Over to you, Honorable Minister. And as I said, all of you are heartily welcomed.
Thank you once more, Honorable Chair, and once more good morning, Honorable Members, and thank you very much, members of the Select Committee, for the invitation to Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs. We are a team, as initially commented on, that is led by two DGs, DG De Kock, who started today, officially as yesterday, Mr. Mbule Lonchangane, a seasoned, he's a seasoned local government practitioner himself, been to human settlement in quite a number of areas as well, but he moved from the office of the presidency back to De Kock, with effect from yesterday, which is the 1st of May, but officially, of course, his official working day is today, starting day, and followed by the DG, Maswahle Dipofu, for Department of Traditional Affairs. We also have MEPA Tihomu, who is our acting CEO, for MISA, which is our infrastructure support agency, and on my immediate right, it's my deputy minister appointed by president. When I'm saying mine, he's not mine. Before I get to be corrected. Deputy Minister Benz Ngamashe, responsible for traditional affairs. Honourable members, we will be tabulating quite a bit of a detailed presentation, but I'm glad, Chair, that you have segmented them and separated them to allow us within the given time to be able to fully discussing on the matters. Behind me, Chair, I will not introduce the entire team, but we brought the Chief Financial Officer of the institution, we brought all the head, the DDGs, and mainly to that level. The department has got almost 500 people. You will actually need the entire parliamentary room to fit us in. So believe you me, we did, Honourable Smith, try to ensure that we bring everyone who the committee would like him or her to be engaging on whatever issue that the committee will have an interest on. And of course, we will be bringing in through presentation to you our revised strategic plan and annual performance plan. And I must indicate that when myself and the CFO and the DG were finalizing the crunch of the numbers, I think in slide 20 what was submitted, we had made a bit of some corrections. She will talk to it later on. With that being said, Chair, I would also like to, I would have wanted to do quite a bit of opening remarks because it's my first time, you know, but it's okay. We are meeting the committee at the time of very much difficult climatic changes across the globe, across the world, in Africa, in South Africa, not being spared in any way. So we also have our disaster management team, which is also part of us, I think, under Program 4, and we'll also be trying to look into programs on how we get our municipalities sustainable and our cities and our communities in trying to be weather alive to what the weather services always advise us to be on. It makes planning one of the difficult areas. You do get forecasts, but you can never be exact. Freddy does come and doesn't come, and you would have planned. And sometimes the planning says, well, 30% rate, and it ultimately ends up being 60%. So I'm raising this because it is in view of building resilient cities, you still need quite a lot more to do within the South African conditions. And that is why you will see there's quite a bit of introduction of overseeing of municipalities with their special framework as well, relocation of people from areas which are either flood lines or are disaster prone to other areas. So we'll be targeting around 30 in this financial year. There will be quite a bit of some new introductions which are aligned and inclined with what the conditions we find ourselves in. Obviously, one can't not indicate the impact that the electricity surges that we have in the country, particularly the negative impact they have on municipalities, households, and communities, which is what the moment in which we bring our APP and our strategic plan toward. The first one is a bit detailed, and I wouldn't want to summarize it. And with that being said, Chair, I would like to hand over to DG Dikok Mbulelo Ntshangane to take us through, and obviously he will be assisted with his by his team that he has brought along. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you. You say he started yesterday, only yesterday.
Well, yes, because I'm saying he's seasoned, he has been in government.
I know. Actually, he has
at Dikok, he started yesterday on the 1st of May 2023.
Yes, so until his departure, actually, he has been reporting. His job was to report to this committee, both in terms of water
Yes.
And sanitation,
and sanitation,
as well as human settlements. We have interacted with him throughout. Yes.
You can.
And welcome, DG. And I must say, and I hope that I represent the view of the collective committee. We are excited that you are here, and we know your capabilities and your commitment to do your work, and we wish you a very fruitful tenure. Yes, in that sense. Yeah. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Honorable Minister, Honorable Chair, and Honorable Members of the Committee. Minister has touched on the structure of the presentation, and we would want to stay in that structure so that we give you enough time to interact with the presentation. The presentation is structured into three parts. The first part is the revised strategic plan of the department, and the second part, which is part two, is the APP, the annual performance plan of the department 2023-2024, and then the last part, and the CFO is going to lead us on that part, is the DCOC MTEF budget allocation. Next slide, please. We've already talked about the purpose of the presentation to the committee. I'm not going to repeat that. You are very much familiar with the vision, the mission, and the values of this department. I can see that the color is not very clear on the screen, but maybe in your copies, if you have hard copies, you can go through all of that. I guess the most important part in that slide is the two blocks at the top. The first one says doing the right things and doing things right, and that talks to governance in general. And then the second part is a functioning system of cooperation and inclusive governance system across government, not just in local government, across the three spheres of government. So we've revised our vision. I'm sure you can go through all of that yourself, the mission and the values of this department. Values are important because they inform the work that we're doing. They guide us. They are more of a compass on how we do our work, a commitment to public service that demonstrates energy, enthusiasm, and enjoyment. I'm sure you're very much aware about the professionalization of the public service. We subscribe to that, as well as the department, the integrity and the accountability, servant leadership, and hands-on approach. These are the values that we subscribe to as the department. Without wasting much of your time, we'll go straight to the next slide. That slide is very busy, but we will summarize it for you. If you look at the first part, right at the top, it talks about the outcomes that we must achieve. As you know, the focus of the executive authority is on the outcome, not so much about the outputs. Outputs talk to us, technocrats, but the minister and members of the portfolio committee are more concerned about whether we're achieving the outcomes that we want to achieve. So here we're talking about functional intergovernmental governance system. We've already touched on it. Citizens engaged and participating in government. And this is also legislated in terms of the Systems Act. Basic services delivered to all citizens in an effective and efficient manner. And this is very important, financially viable municipalities. There will be no service delivery if the finances of the municipalities are not managed in an effective manner. The last one is good governance, sustained good governance. Good municipal governance. I'm not going to go through the focus and all the other areas, but I'll touch on the priorities. Can we move to the next slide, please? If you look at the priorities of the department, are informed by government priorities in general. If you look at government as a whole, we've got a number of priorities. Priority number one is a capable, ethical, and developmental state. And priority number two is economic transformation and job creation. As you know, we have a challenge of unemployment. So whatever we do, it needs to talk to job creation. Number three is spatial integration, human settlements, and local government. These are government priorities. Education, skills, and health, this modernizing economy of ours has to focus on skills development, and we have to invest in educating our people and the workforce. Number five is consolidating the social wage, and number six is social cohesion and safe communities, and number seven is a better Africa and a better world. All of these government priorities inform our six DCOG strategic outcomes. I've already touched on some of them. Number one is the functioning intergovernmental governance system, financially viable municipalities, sustained good municipal governance, citizens engaged and participating in government, basic services, effective and efficient internal corporate governance system. So as you can see, the relationship between government priorities and departmental priorities. Now, in contracting with the citizens of this country, because in our APP and also in our strategic document, we contract with the citizens of this country. We have 21 outputs, and we have 34 output indicators. Under program one, which is administration, we have three outputs, and we have five indicators. Under program two, which is local government operations and support, we have six outputs, and we have nine output indicators. Under policy, governance, and administration, which is program three, in terms of our APP, we have seven outputs, and we have 10 output indicators. Under National Disaster Management Center, we have two outputs and three output indicators. And under Community Works Program, we have three outputs and we have seven output indicators, which gave us 21 outputs and 34 output indicators. I'm stating this upfront because this is how we're contracting with the public. We're telling South Africans and the world that in this APP, we have 21 outputs and we have 34 output indicators. And that's what we will be reporting to you over the year, over the course of the year. How are we getting there? Are we meeting these outputs and output indicators? Without wasting time, I'm now going to hand over to the CFO, who is going to lead us on program one. Program one is administration. Then the CFO will hand over to DTG Dr. Naidu, to Mike Mpo Mukhale, who's going to take us through program two, and program two is local government operation support. And then Mpo will hand over to Dr. Naidu. We will then take care of policy governance administration, and that's program three. And then Dr. Naidu will hand over to Dr. Stolle. We will take care of program four, and program four is National Disaster Management Services. And then we'll then hand over, lastly, to Mr. Mukhale. We will take care of program five. And after program five, we will go straight to the budget, and we will be led by the CFO, Mayor Matlas, who will take us through the budget of the department. At this stage, I'll hand over to Ms. Matlansi to lead us on program one.
Thank you very much, DG. Good morning, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, Minister, Deputy Minister, accounting officer, and colleagues. As indicated, I am taking the committee through Program 1. DG indicated earlier on that under Program 1 we have 3 outputs and with 5 indicators on it. And at the back of it is the annual target. The first output, Chair, is the Corporate Services Improvement Plan that is being implemented by the department. The output indicator there is talking to the approved document. We're quite aware, Chair, that I think we had a lengthy debate in terms of the approved of the plan without knowing the content of what the plan entails. So the plan itself is a document that is encompassed with a number of sub-indicators that when we looked at it and thinking of it bringing it into the APP, it would have bloated the APP. So we've concluded to say it will form part of the Corporate Services Improvement Plan that will be implemented by the 31st of March. In that plan, as I indicated, there are a number of activities, sub-indicators, and they include the likes of the improved communication strategies, the IT services that are in the department, as well as the skills development strategies that are undertaken by the department, just to mention the few. But the plan itself does have all these activities and it's available on our side as well. On that note, we also bring in the service financial services improvement plan, and in that it also encompasses 6 sub-indicators that we have put, and those indicators that we have elevated into the financial management plan for this financial year includes the services that contribute largely to the department bettering its qualifications in terms of the annual report. So the intention is to lift it up for us to have an unqualified audit opinion by the 31st of March 2024. And both of these plans, the aim is to have 90% of that approved plan also implemented at a activity level as well as indicator level. So by the time we reached it 1 month, we would have had this plan approved and 90% of the activities that are incorporated in the plan or embedded in the plan have been finalized and approved by the 31st of March 2024. In the Chair, we have the procurement spend on entities owned by women, youth and persons with disabilities. The committee would realize that in the past we've only focused or we've always been focusing on the percentage spent by entities owned by women as well as owned by youth. We've never technically looked at the percentage procurement spend on entities owned by persons with disabilities. So this financial year, the focus is on us extending or stretching this to those companies that are owned by people with disabilities. We're quite aware that there could be a difficulty in determining as well in determining the companies that may have people with disabilities. We're still working on a strategy in the department. However, we have come up with departmental goals in as far as the threshold is concerned within our procurement plan this financial year. So we are suggesting that for this financial year, ending date 1 March 2024, we will be targeting 40% of procurement spent on women entities, 30% on entities owned by youth, as well as the 7% of the entities spent or owned by persons with disabilities. So the intention here is to say, as we would do awards in this financial year, the target should be mindfully in line with the goals that we've developed, in line with the threshold that we've developed as objectives of the Department of Cooperative Governance. Chair, so with your permission, I'll hand over to my colleague. Thank you.
Thank you very much, CFO, and good morning to the Chairperson and all the members of the Portfolio Committee. Let me also greet our Minister and the Deputy Minister, our DGs, and all our colleagues that are in the meeting, including the Acting CEO of MISA. As reported by the DG, the program 2 has got 6 outputs, I will go to through each one of them. Some of them have got several indicators that I'll be sharing. The first one is to institutionalize, you know, the DDM across all spheres of government. And as you know, that this DDM was launched in 2019. And then it has got three output indicators. The first one is the gazette that that is at the final stage of being gazetted by the minister. And we are intending to have that regulation to be effected as soon as the municipalities enter into the new financial year of July this year. And then the second part of the output indicator is the Intergovernmental Relations Amendment Bill, which we are also piloting through to Parliament, which is going to arrive in Parliament next year. But the intention of this bill, Chairperson, is to strengthen the intergovernmental relations operations. You know that it is currently not very firm as it's supposed to. A lot of our spheres and structures are using, you know, there's a lot of discretion that is still being practiced and manifesting. This bill is going to help us to ensure that it becomes mandated by all of us to really comply with all the developmental goals and ensure that we account in terms of the value chain wherever there are many, some of those lapses. We should not find ourselves now not knowing what to do about it, but everybody should be accountable to the whole intergovernmental relations operation pipe. The last one is 2.3, the indicator is we are now stretching ourselves between ourselves and MISA. Obviously, we are going to be communicating to the provinces and other sector departments to really prioritize one type of catastrophic project to ensure that it's implemented in each and every district ultimately. But for this financial year, it will be, we're focusing on 15, where possible it might be exceeded, but we're giving ourselves 15 this year and 30 the following year, and then also 52 in the outer years. The second output that we have is that one of the long-standing dispute of water and electricity that needs to be resolved. This is a perennial problem, and it is caused by many factors, maintenance issues, cash flow, payment issues in those municipalities, and the capacity of some of these municipalities to really execute these responsibilities. So we're targeting to deal with this dispute head-on, obviously with all the players that are the authorities of these particular functions, the relevant departments. We will be trying to ensure that we really crack these disputes that are perennial in these municipalities, because at some stage we must really they must graduate and be able to focus on other developmental priorities. Then the next outcome that we will be focusing is the municipal support and intervention plans. You would recall, Chairperson, that we had 64 municipalities reported by our department to cabinet in 2021, and last year the number increased to 66. Over and above that 66, what we are saying in this particular APP, we are saying we are prioritizing 22 of those dead 66. There will be some also additions which we'll share with you as we discuss. But that is the priority municipalities that we're going to try and zero in, because the principle is that we can't be able to be all over these municipalities, but we really need to try and focus in particular to this, and then over time in particular, then the rest in general. So this target will also increase in 44 in the next financial year, and then it will be 66 in the outer year. And then in the same breath, we also want to look at ensuring that these municipalities are functional and try to reduce those that are dysfunctional, just begin to reduce them consciously. So the relationship between the previous one and this one, those are the nitty-gritties that we are finalizing between ourselves, MISA, and all the relevant stakeholders to consciously make sure that we really nip it, because We have the 64, then suddenly it is increasing, so we are consciously going to be focusing and ensure that we reduce the graph in those affected municipalities. Then the next one is the functional ward committees. We all know that we have about 4,218 wards in the country, and most of the wards will have been established. So the focus in the past has been disestablished just to make sure that they're all established. But we also know that in some of these metros and some municipalities, they are not established. So we're going to ensure that they are established where they are not established, because the other political parties don't believe in having these ward committees. But over and above that, Chairperson, we're going to then, we're talking about functional ward committees. We're going to ensure that these ward committees have got the ward plan that is going to then be able to be used as a base document to direct their activities, and then we can also assess their performance in terms of those ward plans. And we're looking at also the last one in terms of our output or outcome is the municipal infrastructure grant. You know that we always targeted 85%. We always try to meet 85% of the spending on an annual basis. It is a target that is reached between the minister and the president. But we're saying here that we will be focusing on attaining that 85% as an indicator, and then obviously between now and the end of June, we should be able to ramp it up and ensure that the percentage is achieved. I think the last one is, which is still on the spending of the MIG, is that we're going to, you know that there is 5% of the of that allocation has to be spent on maintenance and operations. We are consciously now going to be focusing to that these percentages are being utilized accordingly by these municipalities with the help of between ourselves and MISA. Most of our indicators are really related to MISA indicators, just to make sure that it reinforces our operation as a block in terms of the as a department to lead this particular expectation, and then we have to go to do our best to make sure that it is implemented. I'll pause here and then hand over to Dr. Naidu to do program number 3. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Come again, Anonymous.
Saying with your permission, I'm getting a bit worried that members may get lost. The slides were not moving as they were talking. I know members have got copies, but maybe it would be good to...
Okay, yes, please. Yes, let's take policy governance and administration.
Thank you very much, and good morning, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members of the Committee, Honourable Minister, Honourable Deputy Minister, and colleagues. So the next two slides are going to deal with the 7 outputs and the 10 output indicators that the branch program 3 policy governance and administration will be responsible for in the financial year that we are in. So the first commitment that we've made is to say that we will in the financial year submit to Cabinet the local government general laws amendment law. Now we do this fresh after processing, Honourable Chair, the Systems Amendment Act last year, and of course in the previous year, the Structures Amendment. Now, suffice to say that we have already commenced with work on the bill. We've consulted with stakeholders, received inputs, and we're of the view that in the months that will come,
we would have a document that we would want to consult with our stakeholders. On the output indicators relating to increased revenue and a decrease in debts, trying to improve revenue management in municipalities. We will try and do this drawing on information that we will extract from National Treasury's Section 71 report. We will continue to do so in terms of dealing with the interventions we've made and reviewing and guiding on property rates, cleansing and verifying indigent registers, and from an audit perspective to support municipalities on records management and data management interventions that we have already been dealing with. Around consequence management, we say that we will want to conclude disciplinary cases in municipalities, and we'll do so by ensuring that the percentage of reported cases of allegations of financial misconduct, fraud and corruption by municipal staff members are concluded. The next slide deals with the remaining five output indicators that would reside in the branch. And we're saying that as part of furthering consequence management, we will monitor with more vigor the code of conduct for councillors, as well as the code of conduct for senior managers, and ensure that where sanctions must be applied, we will advocate that such sanctions will be applied. The eighth output indicator will be looking at improving citizen satisfaction in service delivery, and the department intends to commission an annual survey to measure service delivery in all municipalities. Output indicators 3.9 and 3.10 lend itself to ensuring that we have an output relating to spatially just and transformed national space economy. And the first output indicator in this regard, we will ensure that as a department we will identify 30 municipalities and ensure that their SDFs comply with all SPLUMA requirements. The 10th output indicator in relation to this output will ensure that we will use the 5 ICMs, intermediate city municipalities of Rustenburg, Petrakomo, Nkomazi, Mbombela, and Kwadukusa, and ensure that their capital expenditure frameworks are aligned to the integrated urban development framework. We intend to do this by the end of the financial year. That would be what Program 3 committed to, Honorable Chair Ellis. We'll now hand over to Dr. Fitzgerald to deal with the National Disaster Management Center.
Thank you very much, Chair. Good morning, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, Honourable Minister, Honourable Deputy Minister, DGs, colleagues, good morning. I'll be taking through the Committee on Program 4, the National Disaster Management Centre. The output, the first output is the National Disaster Management Framework. After we reviewed the Disaster Management Act, we did an assessment and then we needed to align the framework, and this framework was aligned so that we were able to deal with issues of disasters under the output indicator 4.1, the number of sector departments implementing the disaster funding arrangement in terms of the Disaster Management Act. In this case, Honorable Chair, we want to make sure that we align the issue of the funding arrangement from national, provincial government, and also to the municipalities. Then the annual targets will be targeting four sector departments to implement the funding arrangement, so that when disasters happen, we allocate the grants, but also the department, they know how to reprioritize the budget as well. The second output under the same, the second output indicators under the output of the National Disaster Management Framework is the number of municipalities in priority disaster areas implementing a disaster management strategy to prevent, prepare, and mitigate disaster risk. And we'll be targeting 14 municipalities in priority disaster areas to make sure that the issue of disasters are being prevented, but also we prepare the communities in relation to response, but also to mitigate the disaster. The last output is the improved functionality of municipalities through the implementation of the National Fire Safety and Prevention Strategy. The output indicator is the number of municipalities implementing the National Fire Safety and Prevention Strategy, because we've realized that informal settlement in some of the areas in some of the provinces where they are rural-based, that have been affected by either the fair fires, and sometimes some of the informal settlement are affected by fires. We want to make sure that those municipalities are able to work with the communities, but also they've got capacity. The annual target will be targeting 10 municipalities to implement the National Fire Safety and Prevention Strategy. Thank you very much, Chair. I'll hand over to my next colleague.
Yes, Chairperson. I'm with the CFO is going to take the other part of it. We are managing it. Yes. This is the last program, number 5, which is community work program. And it has got 3 outputs. The first one is the one dealing with CWP participants that are enrolled in the program. And we are targeting to have the number of 230 people that the participants that are going to be that are on our system that are actually being with us for some time. Then 5.2, the second indicator talks about a number of people that we're going to train and empower, and then to ensure that upon those achievements being attained, they can then exit the program, and then we're targeting 20,000 people for this financial year. And then the last indicator around this under this output, it talks about percentage of women, youth, and persons with disabilities participating in the program, and we're targeting 55% of women, 30% of the youth, and 2% persons with disabilities in participating in the program. And the second output that we have is that of procurement spent on entities owned by women, youth, and persons with disabilities, and we're targeting 40% spent on entities owned by women, and then 30% entities owned by the youth, and 7% procurement of entities spent owned by people, persons with disabilities. I will leave the last output to be done by the CFO to explain on it. It is to be about and qualified for its outcome.
Thank you, Mr. Mkhale.
Sure.
Chair, the program CWP at its inception, it used the model of the implementing agents. And in that instance, we had procured them through the supply chain management practices, and it has been found, as in the annual reports of the past, that some of the contracts that we had were irregular. So we had a number of irregularities that have been reported in our annual reports, including the one that we've just closed. Now, we felt that given that this program had more budget and created some irregularities, that we flag the element of the unqualified audit opinion in this program as an output indicator that we are focusing on in this financial year. The rationale again being that it is that program that contributed largely to the irregular expenditures of the department. So we are indicating in this slide, Chair, that we would, within this financial year, improve our qualification to an unqualified audit opinion. So we are basically saying there are a number of material irregularities that have been raised, and our intention is to resolve them in this financial year as they emanate from the previous financial year. The intention of the target is that 100% of these material irregularities and the qualification paragraphs that we've been having for the past years be resolved by the 31st March 2024. So ordinarily this would have been under Program 1. As I indicated that from the plan of the financial management improvement, we have activities that also contribute to us having an unqualified audit opinion in this financial year. Chair, while I'm on this, I will take the budget as well, if you can move to the next slide. Chair, in this financial year and the MTEF itself, I think this one is only focusing on 1 April 2023 to 31 March 2024. We are indicating to the House that the budget that we have that is funding the APP and the strategy plan that we've labeled earlier has number of drivers on it, and the value ones are your program 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. And I think we must emphasize, it's not moving, sorry, it's slide number 19. My apologies, slide number 19. Yes, that slide is correct. So now, these drivers, they form part of the programs of the department in terms of the budget structure. We have program 1, which is administration, and it's a support function, and where ministry and deputy ministry is, and mostly in this instance we do have operational budget largely. And then we have the program 2, program 3, program 4, and program 5, which are the core to the department in terms of the service deliveries. So you will have the budget largely in our program 3, which is 96.9 billion. And we have program 2 following at 9.2 billion, and then program 4, which is our disaster, sitting at 932 million. The largest part of the budget also goes to the CWP program, which is taking the 4.3 billion. So that encompasses the entire budget of 121 billion for this financial year to be accounted for the plan that we have in use of our annual performance and operational plan, including those contractual arrangements that we intend to do in this financial year using our demand management plan or the procurement plan that has been approved for us to contract in this financial year. We are also giving you the economic classifications wherein we show you the compensation of employees at a ceiling of 346 million, goods and services at 4.7 billion, that includes the CWP program, transfers and subsidies, as well as the capital budget of 23.4 million. So I don't exclude the capital budget as well. The next slide will be slide number 20, which is what Minister touched on earlier. We have made some corrections on that one, but I must indicate, Chair, that this is the budget that is broken down from that 121 billion. On this slide, we are indicating the allocations of all the transfers that the department is undertaking to our entities as well as the municipalities that we are serving. And we are flagging out here that the largest budget of the department goes to the equitable share, which takes an amount of 95% at the most, and is indicated is under Program 3 as a key driver. And the other largest budget that we can flag out is that issue of the Municipal Infrastructure Grant, which is MIG, and I must emphasize that the rationale for us even correcting this slide was that in the second allocation data by National Treasury, monies have been taken away from the recovery grant disaster and to improve the MIG. So there has been those changes that have been made subsequent to the initial letter that we received and the final letter that we received. So that was the snack of this slide vis-a-vis the slide that members had as of yesterday, and I think we profusely apologize on that one. So on this one, again, we are indicating that we have your goods and services, as indicated earlier on, that is largely also encompassing the issue of the payment of capital assets. The next slide, Chair, I think it's very important for us to indicate to the House that the ceiling that I spoke of in terms of the compensation of employees or the cost to the employer is 346, and when we look at the 346 together with the HR corporate services, we with the structure that is funded, however bloated according to the budget allocation baseline, we would be running a risk as a department if we are to fill in all the number of vacant positions that are in the department, and currently they are at a amount of 90, and we do have some positions that have been filled, not yet filled, however they are in the process of being filled. Interviews have been undertaken as well. So we are largely looking at curbing the issues of the filling of vacancies to a point where we would want them just to indicate only critical positions that will be appointed, just for us not to increase or overstep the limit of the 346. As we all know that we are not in a position to can increase the COE nor decrease the COE in terms of the revenue bill. Now, if we look at the other surplus that we have, or the deficit rather, we have this wage settlement that has not been incorporated by all departments, and we are indicating, Chair, that we have looked into that in terms of the bargaining agreements that have already taken place, and all the departments are expected to fund this within their budget, regardless of the fact that the budget has actually been reduced in this financial year. So we've looked at the number of issues within the department, and we've came up with the conclusion to say more money can be taken away from the travel and subsistence costs, as well as the other consultants in terms of the program. We shall be in communicate with National Treasurer on this, as they had indicated in their letter that they will communicate with all the departments relative to this. And the idea here is just to say there is no additional money that the departments would receive. However, these departments have to have these trade-offs within their budget for us to have a soluble and an informed medium-term budget that would be tabled by Minister of Finance. So we have taken a proactive approach on this one, just to determine that we have already tabled it at our EXCO meeting as well, and it has been endorsed to that. So I thought I should bring this to the attention of the committee that as a department we are filtering the 7.5%, just so that we don't have a deficit, and this can only be done during the mid-term budget. And we were warned that we should we implement this without the medium term, there is a risk that will be followed. So as department, we are cautious on that. We do not want to take any steps beyond the Treasury approval, or rather what they would agree to us. Next slide. I think this is part of us indicating to the House that while we do have an increase in the budget in terms of the outer years, we may be finding challenges in this financial year in terms of our capital assets. We do have means to can cap that in this financial year. I think we will shorten our issues of, or rather come up with cost containment relative to the issues of the buying of the vehicles, as well as other issues. But the issue here is that we are supposed to be moving to the new building and buy the furniture as well as equipment needed for the new furniture. But we are mindful of the cost as well to that, just so that we don't overstep the budget for capital assets. Next slide. The slide will be 23. Chair, given the budget that we've indicated, there is a need there for us to can indicate to say the allocation that I spoke of earlier over the years, and indicate that 8.3 billion has been added in this MTEF period for improvement in the local government equitable share, and I think the 2.5 billion is for this financial year, and the outer years are fully funded as such for the provision of the basic services. I think, Chair, in this slide we're also indicating that there has been a household growth in our municipalities of 2.7, in as far as the steps SA figures are concerned, and I think these are the figures that are getting reviewed annually by the National Treasury as well as our FFC in this instance, just so that we determine that the allocation that is being made in the financial year covers all the rural areas and municipalities and covers the economic growth within those, or rather the household growth, inclusive of those growth in terms of your bulk water and all those other services. The intention here is for us to be able to, within that growth, to come up with the data that is credible for National Treasury to close the gap in terms of the fiscal challenges that we have in those areas, given the fact that there's little economic development that is happening in those. So this formula is fully funded to account for household growth and the cost to increase over the medium-term expenditure framework. Next slide. I think in this slide we're trying to indicate to the House that the two grants that are being transferred, as I indicated earlier, the other one is the conditional one. The bigger one is the unconditional grant, which is your equitable share per household, as well as your municipal infrastructure grant per household. I think the rationale for bringing this slide is just to indicate to the House that on an average, each municipality receives 8,500 rand per household, in contrast to the metro at 3.2, simply because it is expected out of municipalities in general in terms of the framework that they should be generating entities or municipalities, but due to the fact that there are little or no economic growth and development in the rural areas, the bigger part of the budget is expended in those areas just to cover the cost of the poor revenue growth in those instances. If you look at the metro and the secondary cities, they stand a good chance of having strategies to have revenue being generated within the period that is being budgeted for by both, including the large towns.
As you wrap, we may be behind time.
I'm wrapping up, Chair. The next slide is also giving, if I could, lead to this. We have all these breakdowns as the provinces, and I think I need to indicate that the unallocated money, it is arising from the fact that there has not been any projects that have been finalized, and I think it's the issue of the NESA, which was increased, but now when it comes to allocation, it decreased to 15%. So that money remained unallocated for this financial year because of those issues of the instability between the growth of the NESA and the electricity hikes as well. However, we indicated to Treasury that this money should be utilized for the local municipalities and the pressures that have been experienced. The next slide talks to the same. It's also allocation for provinces in terms of the MIG. And in this one, we are also indicating that that unallocated fund is relative to those projects that could not be finalized for sports and recreation, and they will be finalized during the course of this year. That unallocated will be allocated back into 2024-25. This sums our budget allocation. Thank you very much, Chair.
All right, thank you very much. Do you want to say anything, Honourable Minister, to wrap up? You're okay. Okay, good. I'm going to invite members of Parliament to engage with the presentation. What we do, we give one member of Parliament to exhaust the questions. I'm going to urge, I know that there could be a lot of questions, but obviously at the same time we mitigate that with time that we have. We must just be careful, and I don't want to restrict people from engaging with the presentation. I will start there, Honorable Smith, and end with Honorable Saif.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. As I said, some of my questions might need written a reply. We'll consider that. Firstly, Chair, I want to know, how does the department plan to reduce the number of non-financial viable municipalities? Because, that's a problem that we're sitting with. Good example, if I can mention, is the Mogopong municipality previously and the Morimole municipality, who were both financially not viable and then combined into one, which is even less financially viable. I want to know in terms of accountability of councillors, because members of parliament declare their interest and it is made public. Is the same applied to councillors? If not, then why not? I've got a specific question about Mogalakwena, a local municipality in Limpopo, which got a budget of just over 1.6 billion, of which 1.3 billion is operational currently and just over 300 million is capital budget, where when I was a councillor in 2014, it was almost a 50-50 split. So I want to go a bit further because I assume it is because of the 400 people that's been illegally appointed in that municipality. If that is the case, when is that going to be solved? Because it is implicating very heavily on that municipality's capability to deliver services. Then, this is quite a can of worms, I suspect. The contribution of municipalities to the fund for the protection, for the fire protection associations registered in municipal areas. In terms of the National Veld and Forest Fire Bill, municipalities must, and let me read that, where a fire protection association has been registered in an area controlled by a municipality and that municipality has a service or in which there is a designated services. The municipality and designated services must become a member of the Fire Protection Association. The owners in respect of state land must join any Fire Protection Association registered in that area in which the land lies. So in the case, again, of Mogalakwena, it came to my attention that they're not registered. So I will submit a written question in terms of all municipalities and who are actually registered and contributing towards that. Then I want to know what role does the department play in the decisions made by the demarcation board? Because that obviously also have implications for financial viability and all of that, because I see these processes up and running and changes that doesn't make any logical sense in terms of really serving those communities. Then this is another hot topic, is in terms of communal and tribal land. Is there any plan to make them part of the contributors to rates and taxes to the municipalities? Because that impacts as well on that. And it is, you know, we're going to have the argument about poverty and all of that, but that's why there's indigent grants. And the indigent grants will apply the same. So, because there's people who built 10, 20 million rand houses on that, that should contribute towards the operations of municipalities. Then what is the department doing to prevent the abuse of interventions for political and factional battles instead of supporting municipalities? Because that is something that we battle with as a committee as well, is in terms of, you know, making sure that when administration actually took place, that the municipality steps out better instead of worse. And unfortunately, if we're really honest with ourselves, in most cases, we walk out worse after administration. So is there any clear criteria that determines, you know, when interventions must take place and shouldn't take place? You know, because there's sometimes interventions in places where you question why the intervention, and other places which should have intervention, there's no intervention coming forth. Then my last question is, why is COCTA preventing municipalities from using a portion of the capital budget, conditional grant, for upgrading and maintaining existing infrastructure in towns, especially small towns? Because that is, when I asked the question to a municipality, they said no, they are not allowed to use those funds for town, it must all be used outside. While the existing infrastructure in town is falling apart and there's no capital. So I want to extend a little bit is, did the department do a study in terms of municipalities and the backlog on infrastructure? And, you know, on existing infrastructure that needs to be replaced. Because some infrastructure have been installed in the 1950s, 60s, 70s, and today, you know, need to be replaced. And that capital, so that we at least know where we're standing and what type of capital we need to get our municipalities viable. Thank you.
All right, thank you. I take all the questions. This, if it's going to be... question answer is not going to work given the time limitations that we have. Honorable Barnard.
Chair, thank you very much. Good morning, colleagues. Again, like my colleague said, I might have to reduce my questions to written questions in order to save time. And excuse my ignorance, I joined this committee in December, and I joined Parliament in December, so there might be questions that I ask out of ignorance, and I apologize for that in advance. I just want to ask, I noted in the vision, it was very small on the presentation, but I noted District 1 plans, and I wanted to know exactly what does District 1 plans entail in terms of the vision. I also noted that... I would like to know how many of the MIC receiving dysfunctional municipalities are there at the moment in the previous financial year, and what is the breakdown of the value of those grants, and what are we doing as COCTA to get those dysfunctional municipalities to adhere to the grant prescribes, and or to get the money back if possible. I've also noted that there are priority disaster areas in South Africa as identified by COCTA. Which are those areas and which 14 municipalities are being targeted to prevent, prepare and to mitigate disaster risks? And also, what are these strategies? I also note, and this is a notice of alarm, that there's an unqualified audit on the community work program. The community work program, and this is according to the department's website, is an innovative offering from the government to provide a job safety net for unemployed people of working age. It provides a bridging opportunity for unemployed youth and others who are actively looking for employment opportunities. I would like to know what was the budget for CPWP in 2022-2023. What is the value of the material irregular expenditure that was picked up by the Auditor General? How did the irregular expenditure occur? And then my last question, what is the department doing to recover the irregular expenditure, and what are they doing to mitigate future irregular expenditure in this very important program? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honorable Motamai.
Thank you, Chairperson. Why annual targets on administration program are set for the 31 March 2024, but not quality? In fact, all your programs are set for same date. Which dysfunctional municipality in the province will be supported by the program? What caused a delay on tabling of the intervention and monetary bill? What has been the support of the Department of Emfuleni local municipality on the spending of MIG funds? On the program 3, which 66 municipalities in the province will be supported to ensure appointments of qualified senior officials? On program 4, which 14 municipalities in the province will be supported to implement disaster management strategy? Just raise a concern
that the annual targets are set for March 2024. There is also a concern that the presentation lack information on municipality per province that will be assisted. I think you should.
Thank you, Honorable Muzamai. Honorable Malega.
Thank you, Chairperson. And good morning, Minister, Deputy Minister, and officials, and good morning, the members. Chairperson, I want to check with the department in the program too. How is the department monitoring of MIG allocation, especially to those dysfunctional municipalities? And my question is also in program 4. Which are those 10 municipalities implementing the national fire safety and prevention strategy? Because they did mention that there are 10 municipalities. And my last one on program 5, the issue of 230,000 people participating in the CWP is for all provinces or certain provinces, districts or municipalities. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable Malek, Honorable Sheikh.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. And let me also thank the Minister and the Department for taking us through the budget and APP. Chair, I think with regard to the district development model and the various, I think, the initiative around regulations as well as legislation with regard to the IGR Framework Act, Chair, I think it's important that we do have the necessary pieces of legislation for the implementation of the district development model. However, I would also say that I think it's important that it be fast-tracked, and the timeline that has been given in the APP is the end of the financial year, and I would imagine that if the department actually sticks to that deadline, they must take into cognizance the processes that have to also unfold in the National Council of Provinces, not just in the National Assembly, in terms of that piece of legislation. And obviously we would also want to see that piece of legislation approved during our term of Parliament, let me put it that way. With regard to the three pilot projects in relation to the district development model, there have been also lessons that have come out of that, and I want to also know, in terms of the fact that we don't have a legislative framework, the target with regard to the projects in the 15 districts or metro municipalities, whether the lessons from there are being used here, given the fact that there is no legislative framework. But obviously, Chair, we'd also want to know which districts or metros are being targeted in terms of the 15, and which districts and or metros do not have any project or whatever in relation to the district development model. Secondly, Chair, with regard to the dysfunctional municipalities, I think we should note and appreciate that in the various targets that come out of the cooperative governance APP, they relate to dysfunctional municipalities, and I think it's pretty much comprehensive around the issues. But also, maybe just to say, Chair, I know we still to get the APP presentation by MISA, that this is also flows through their presentation as well. And I think we should note that. But just in terms of the 22 dysfunctional or high-risk municipalities, perhaps if we could just get some indication in terms of how have these municipalities been identified. Does it also include, I think one question was raised earlier around municipalities with unfunded budgets. Obviously, Chair, we would want also a breakdown of which municipalities are these in which provinces, etc. And then again, with regard to the the city municipalities with PLUMA compliant spatial development frameworks. Obviously, the breakdown share in terms of which municipalities are these. But I'd like to know how are matters related to SPLUMA implementation being dealt with or addressed with traditional leaders? How are they actually being brought on board? And the reason that we also raise it here is that with the current disasters, the flood damage that took place, you could see that SPLUMA has not necessarily been adhered to or implemented in especially some of the more traditional and or rural areas. Chair, I think, let me stop there, Chair. Thanks.
In terms of time, just be quick.
I'll be quick. Thank you, Chair. Firstly, as I mentioned to the other minister, we want to urge the minister when there's a 76 bill to consider to introduce it in the NCOP so that we can finish our process and then it goes to the NA instead of the other way around. That gives us enough time to do our processes and then the NA can follow up on ours. So just something to consider, please, Minister. Then my question is in terms of district municipalities. The functionality of or the purpose of those municipalities, is quite in question. If we look at Waterberg District Municipality and what they are responsible for, it's the minimum work. Is there really, a function for them at this stage? If not, then how do we fix that? Because I think the whole intention of district municipalities was to provide expertise services to municipalities. For example, having an engineer or whatever that can't be afforded by the smaller municipalities, but then can have support throughout the district. And that is not happening. So how is the department planning to fix that?
All right, thank you very much. What is quite clear is that there are a lot of questions. And these questions are very specific. I think it requires us to divide these questions into a way that will invite the department to come and deal specifically with areas of concern. And Minister, in the interest of time, I'm not going to ask any question, but I'm just going to raise a matter which is a concern to me. A year, 2 years ago, the department identifies 66 or what municipalities as dysfunctional. And I want you to give me another scenario. I get a sense that there is little improvement on these municipalities, the 66. Maybe part of it is that we need to go one by one, assess each one of them on their own merit, but I want to know, from your side as the department, are you satisfied that you are uplifting these municipalities from their dysfunctionality? And what could be the reasons why the situation seemed not to be improving? Two, linked to that. Every day your metro municipalities are in a crisis. Metro municipalities, all of them. All of them. We have postponed our trips on three occasions to Gauteng. And that MEC, we are going to have to summon him to appear before this committee because he has postponed us on three occasions just when we were on the verge of doing a proactive oversight. We don't want to come at a last resort when a municipality has been placed under administration. We want to really understand clearly what are the problems of Tshwane. Why this instability and political, it seems that these are political issues. Why Gauteng? Why Johannesburg? Why Ekurhuleni? Why this instability that negatively affect our people? To the MEC of this province, we wanted to talk about the Western Cape, specifically Cape Town. Cape Town is not spending its big, its municipal infrastructure grant. And we can see that there are still problems in the townships. And the evidence is there from the Auditor General. My point is that a special focus is needed at the metros because they carry the biggest budget of all the municipalities in the country. And when they shake the overwhelming number of people who live in those metropolitan municipalities. And the sense that I get, I'm not comfortable. I'm a bit worried about that situation. Is there a specific approach that you have developed to tackle matters of the metros? But we want them here. We want to engage with them one-on-one so that we understand the extent and the magnitude of the problem. The third one is a concern as well. And is the last one. There could be a lot of issues that I can raise. For as long as I remember me sitting here, on this chair, as chair. We have been told about this monitoring support intervention legislation, but nothing is coming. I'm scared that next year we'll be sitting here told that, hey, this is coming. There is fire burning. There are inconsistencies in respect of interventions. How interventions are made. There is no uniformity. And I'm worried. Last year, I was told the same situation, that the bill is coming. This year, again, you say that it is in the pipeline. We are going to the elections, and nothing is coming forward. I'm raising this matter, Honorable Minister, because even where you intervene as a national department, there are problems. There seem to be problems of intervention all over. Isiomangaung is a problem. Is Inokum Gijima. I don't know how many times have you gone there just this year, where there is national intervention in terms of section 139, subsection 7 of the Constitution. And I'm worried that even where you intervene and the situation ought to be much better than maybe where a province intervenes, and I don't know what is the problem. All that I'm saying is that there are all these issues that needs to be unpacked, and the previous minister of Kokta had is last year, convened a summit where we were talking about some of these things, and I don't hear you talking about that. Okay, we are here now. We are busy identifying the issues. The committee or whatever that is working on this is coming because we need to look at the whole system of local government. Where are the fault lines? The fact of the matter is things are not okay, and we are the ones sitting here who must be at the forefront of bringing solutions, attending to the problems, making sure that local government works, and it works better for the people. There are political problems, administrative problems, governance problems, financial management problems, basic service problems. Where I come from is potholes after potholes all over the show. And I'm asking myself, all of these municipalities get meek. What are they doing with it? Is it insufficient? What is the problem? All that I'm saying is that we need to unpack each and every matter that is on the table and find a way of dealing with those particular matters. As you respond to the questions, as I said, there are a lot of questions that I have, but no, I'm not asking any questions. I just want to get your comments on the issues that I raised. Thanks. To you, Minister. In the interest of time, let us also be wary of time, because we still have two other presentations that are still coming. Lastly, I agree that other questions is written. You, as I listened, you, Honourable Members, required a lot of statistical information. How many this? How many that? It needs some follow up, and we cannot expect the department to give us everything here and now as we want it, even though the delegations are beefed up. Over to you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. I've tried religiously to take each and every question that was raised by every Honourable Member down, so that we can be able, Honourable Chair, as you have also advised, make written submissions with regard to the information that Honourable Members have requested. So I will, because we have time pressures, Honourable Chair, just make a selection, particularly the specific understanding on dysfunctional municipalities, so that even when additional information comes, at least the premise is relatively balanced on what is the meaning of what will be coming. And secondly, also the request with regard to which municipalities. We will do that in writing. There are fire related to 10 municipalities, but there's also 22 municipalities which are highlighted on the plan with regard to the dysfunctionality on what areas will those be municipalities be about. We'll submit that. But we must also indicate, Chair, that when you are dealing with the dysfunctionalities, there's an assessment tool that we use, and it has got 5 indicators whether a municipality is stable with regard to governance, administration, service delivery, financial management. What am I forgetting? Oh, unfunded budget. So if your municipality ticks all the 5 boxes, it's dysfunctional. In the previous financial year, you will recall we had 64 dysfunctional municipalities. We had an increase of 2 to 66 when we closed. So they were ticking all these 5 boxes. Now, you equally will have municipalities which may not necessarily tick all the 5 boxes, but are still in a way dysfunctional. So these 22 fit all the 5 boxes of the 66, which means you then remain with 44. They are still dysfunctional, but maybe they may not have an unfunded budget. Maybe they will have a strong element of consequence management and not delivering on basic service delivery. Then you put it in a box, but it's still dysfunctional. So the 22 covers the ones that have got all the 5 boxes. So we'll give you the entire 66 check with the indicators that I'm mentioning, and then tick the box for each and every one. And then you will automatically see the cutoff of the 22 and the rest of the 34 that comes. What areas are they struggling from the 5 pillars, which I said are a problem. The same with section 139 on the 3 at least examples that have been made. And we may want guidance from the committee, because whether it's provincial administration or national administration, there are difficulties on placing municipalities under intervention. In some instances, we assist the province, as we always do. In fact, the LGOS branch has got provincial COCTA national members in each and every province. And they work daily there together with the provincial COCTAs to try and assist municipalities, whether they are under administration or intervention or not. But I would have loved, Chair, when we are under national administration,
that I'll bring new people, I'll bring a new council, I'll bring a new everything so that I can show how. But the Lord doesn't allow us. I mean, if you take an example of Mangaung and Enoch Mgijima, you know, Ligwa, I came almost towards the tail end. But I want to raise the two where I've been practically been involved as a person as well. That is Mangaung and Enoch Mgijima. You don't have powers to dissolve council. So in each and everything that even the experts that you bring recommend, they still have to take it to council. And council has the right to say no. And then you have got to bring intermediary services. In Mangaung is the first way we use the TDM approach. Environmental Affairs has sent someone from National Department of Water and Sanitation, the same. Our MISA team here, from an infrastructure point of view, the same. Human Settlement have brought their own expert to assist the municipality and their directors with regard to human settlement. So we've got a 10-team where sister departments have brought from a national level and transfer it to the municipality. So what does that mean? It means if you are a director of human settlement in the municipality, you work with the one of national under the, and ourselves we brought the acting city manager and a director of corporate services to Mangaung. But the custodian of the power still lies with what the legislation or legislation puts it. In Enoch Mgijima, it's even worse. The team is led by National Treasury there. We are also of a supporting role because it's mostly on a financial obligation intervention. But they're operating from outside the municipality. The accusation, you don't walk into my space. So they're operating in a hotel. And they're saying the municipality is not receiving us. It does not want us inside. I went with the former minister for an assessment. We intervened. We thought we had find common cause to bring the teams together to begin to operate. But believe you me, I sent DM down last week again to the same municipality to still work on some of the issues which I thought at the time I was DM had already worked into. But you then find that there are contestations. And when we say we actually do believe that at a municipal level nobody should be involved and hold a political position, yes, some unions are saying we're taking their right away, we are ready to test it in court. But it's because there's so much close friction on what happens in a municipality than in any sphere of government with regard to interaction. And then you get the politics that comes into a municipality and it runs the municipality not in line with what you would want as honorable members to see. But we will submit all those additional information. I was just saying, I'll just take a snapshot on what you are saying. I think, Honorable Chair, I'll ask my team, Kevin, to talk mainly on the bill and see if we could be able to shorten the period. I think you've also raised it, and Honorable Sheikh has raised it, and I think I do see its importance of possibly concluding it prior the end of the sixth administration, and the explanation by Mr. Mohale on one plan. Honorable Smith, I visited Mkhalagwena myself twice, and I've given direction on what needs to happen about the 400 medical employees. One could also go back and verify and see. But we had even volunteered to take DPSA to assist them to assess the structure and see if it's fit for purpose for what it's supposed to do versus the 1.6 billion and 1.3 OPEX and no capital money for the spending. When there was a major problem of potholes, we then requested the Department of Public Works to come and do a portion of the work that they were able to do, but there was no maintenance. So there's quite a lot where we have went. We'll be able also to showcase what we have tried to do, and we'll also make a follow-up prior to the written submission so that the municipality could be able to. We also went back there after receiving communication from the human rights, from
commission where there were people who complained about sewer that is spilling in a particular section. We requested the WS to go and assist, but you can only send a team for 2 months, but the municipality must take over and make sure that it continues. So we need to be having a constant. And we had also put them on terms with regard to the appointment of directors, which they never had when we arrived, but I know they are sitting in court with regard to the appointment of the MM, and we are waiting for that process to come on board. Honorable Mzamai, maybe we may want to look into what the same date is. I do recall what you are raising on, but a portion of the information of what you need is with regard to the 66 and the naming of the 22 and the 10 municipalities and the 40 that would be assisted with regard to disaster. We could be able to give an opportunity to the directors here and they look into the same date of the end of March 2024 as to whether did they close it as at the end of the financial year and we can't break it in between. Mfuleni, we took the deputy president even last 2 weeks ago into Mfuleni with regard to the monitoring of the assistance that both the province is giving and ourselves with regard to service delivery. What honorable members need to note as well is that intervention cannot be permanent. It's to assist the municipality, lift them up, and they need to be able to get into their space because we don't remove them when we get there. But the problem is that when you get in and when you exit to go to another place, the whole system collapses. There's also a very high turnover with regard to appointment and resignation, which happens generally at the municipal element. We might have not covered it because DDG Naidu covered mostly the areas on. Now we would want to really look into, are they finishing all the, for example, disciplinary cases that they have? Are they compliant? Do they have compliant people who are appointed to see that there's sustainability with regard to capacity in those areas and we are able to measure the impact of what the people will be doing. But it is very, very fluid as it is. And that is why we're coming with those measures to ensure that we will. And then I'll ask addition on the monitoring bill that was also raised. The SPLUMA will be part of the submission on the issues with regard to the 10 municipalities that we'll be dealing with. But yes, there are difficulties. And we are on a second round with regard to discussion on the new funding model for municipalities, which include collection in rural areas. And it's something that needs to be piloted in our plan in the first 3 DDM pilots, and then we move into all the municipalities. This affects whether you go to Mthatha, whether you go to Toyando, in Venda, whether you go to anywhere else between a demarcation in a rural space and the urban space. There's collection there, the services on the other end, even when people afford it, don't pay. I mean, the municipality I come from, I lost the battle between the edge of the city. Just 10 kilometers outside town is a traditional land, and people are building beautiful houses, and we're trying to collect, but it's a process which needs to be legislated first before one you could be able to. So there are those endeavors. Maybe the question should be, we need to move at a faster pace on almost everything. We'll do our best to do that, Chair, but it may not necessarily be humanly possible.
I have a proposal on our minister that we pack all other responses now because it is unfair for other departments. And I'm sure you're treating all these departments equally. And in the interest of time, we must focus on the two traditional, starting with traditional affairs, and then go to MISA, and thereafter we'll come back to the questions as asked, and then take it from there. I suggest we do that. Otherwise, we are going to sit here and Parliament is sitting at 2 o'clock, and that will be a problem for us. And even the people who came here with a purpose of presenting and sharing information with us. Is that okay?
It's a great honor.
Okay, good. Over to you on that, on our minister or deputy minister, I'm not sure how you want to handle that. Lead us on traditional affairs.
Okay, well, we're done already opening remarks, DM. I think you may want to close after the DG has just started briefly to give the presentation, just to save time so that we don't open and close in one presentation. So I can request the chair to hand over. If
DG will present. We can see that these are the programs. They have how many indicators? Just run through them without putting yourself under pressure. Just go through them in that way, because you can see sometimes when you repeat, it takes a lot of time. That's what I'm proposing. And next time, be rest assured. I start with Misa, I go to traditional, and finish with court. Yes, okay. Mark my word and hold me to that next time. Yes.
We're thankful for the equal opportunities, Honourable Chair. Thank you, Honourable Chair, and Honourable Members of the Committee, the Honourable Deputy Minister and Honourable Minister colleagues. I think already in terms of the presentation, if you could just do slide three. Yes, yeah. So I think the slide three on introduction, if we just go to that one, yeah, just to recap, because we kept emphasizing the point, Honourable Chair, that we work with the Institution of Traditional and Question Leadership, not for the sake of the institution itself, but that the institution can be oriented towards community development, and in the support that we provide to them, ultimately the expectation is that there is a contribution to community development. We just also do a recap in terms of what our particular outcomes are. One which relates to the department itself, corporate governance within the department. Two, relating to the promotion of safe initiation practices. Three, relating to promoting and supporting the functionality of the institution itself. And four, looking at development partnerships in traditional and quiescent communities, and then five, looking at the transformation of the institution itself. So we'll skip slide four, which is really just indicating what the presentation will be about. So we start on slide five in terms of the outcomes there. Honourable Chair, you've already indicated that the information is captured there. But just to indicate there that we've got two particular output indicators there. And what we have done is we've taken all the issues that relate to organizational performance and relate to HR, handling of grievances, dealing with submission of workplace skills plan, all those compliance issues, is a list of them. So we've compiled a plan which we call Organizational Performance Information Plan, and another one which is called Corporate Financial Management Plan. So all the issues relating to the payment of suppliers within 30 days and so on, we've collapsed them into those two plans. And that's what we focus on as part of effective governance in the department. On the next slide, we've added one that deals with the training interventions for our staff. And then finally, there's the one that deals with ongoing work that we do with the Department of Women, Youth and Persons with Disabilities around GBV interventions in the sector as a whole, where we coordinate reporting for the sector as a whole for across the departments, which reports then we share with the Department of Women, Youth and Persons with Disabilities, and agree on areas of steering decisions where these are necessary. On the next slide, which then deals with functional institution of traditional and Christian leadership, following the enactment of the TKLA, Traditional and Christian Leadership Act, one of the priorities has been to support the legal constitution of traditional councils to make sure that they are established in terms of law, so that they can fulfill the responsibilities they are required to fulfill. And we are saying that given the lack of progress experienced during the year that we are coming out from, there's going to be a direct intervention through the minister to make sure that we support at least 200 traditional councils so that they can be established in terms of the provision of the traditional and Khoisan leadership act. In addition, promoting the functional institution of traditional and Khoisan leadership, we continue to receive applications for recognition. In terms of the legislation, applications for recognition of a kingship or a king are supposed to be handled by the president, and so when they get received by the presidency, they get referred to the minister for assistance, which is what is provided for in law. And we are indicating that we will have to make sure that we process those applications within 6 months of receipt. And then, of course, there is also an ongoing leadership disputes in the sector, and there are disputes that relate to kingships and queenships that get referred to us through the presidency, and we'll also want to be measured in the basis of the percentage of those disputes that we are able to assist in towards their resolution. On the next slide is the outcome that deals with safe initiation practices, and here we're saying that a major problem here is particularly illegal initiation schools, and we took a decision to focus specifically on the reduction of illegal initiation schools because that's where the majority of the casualties come from. So we're targeting a reduction in the number of illegal customary initiation schools in partnership with all the role players. We just coming from an Indaba held last week, chairperson organized by the Sierra Rice Commission, where all relevant players were brought together to agree on working together to make sure that they promote safer initiation practices. And it's a very good starting point for us to take this work forward. Our intention, because all the reports indicate that the travel area is Oar Tambo in the Eastern Cape, that's where the highest casualties are experienced, that we will then have a particular focus on illegal initiation schools in the Oar Tambo region in the Eastern Cape. On the next slide, we focus on issues relating to development as part of the district development model and the Eastern Seaboard Development Initiative. We're saying that, and I think one of the honourable members has already raised the issue of development and the use of communal land for purposes of development. And we are saying that for the success of the Eastern Seaboard Development Initiative, a lot of the investment will have to happen in what is currently communal land. And we'll have to work with the four houses of local houses of traditional and Khoisan leadership to make sure that they actively participate in the Eastern Seaboard Development Initiative with a particular focus on contribution and availing of communal land that will actually then serve as capital for the communities that are affected. So all those four districts there, Oar Tambo, Alfred Nzo, Ugu, and Heregwala, will be working with them in that regard. And that also, in a sense, is a contribution of towards the Invest Rural Master Plan, which the Institution of Traditional Leadership has come up with to convert the rural development challenges into investable opportunities. We also have another outcome indicator here around development in traditional communities, but this one focuses specifically on traditional communities where there is mining activity, with the concerns that generally get raised that the communities do not benefit sufficiently, if any, from the mining activities that are taking place there, and engagements with the Department of Mineral Resources and Energy indicate that although there are social and labor plans that are developed, the plans are either weak or even if they are perhaps good enough, they are not implemented adequately, monitored effectively. So we're saying that perhaps what we should do this time around is to focus specifically on those communities now. And we said as a start, we'll take 10 of those communities so that working with the Department of Mineral Resources and Energy and the mining companies themselves and those traditional communities, we go deeper into those plans to make sure that the plans are meaningful, are relevant to the communities, and we have identified particular areas of focus that we'll specifically be looking at. That's the reason learnerships for learners in those communities, employment opportunities for locals, and of course procurement opportunities for local SMEs as well. So that is another area of focus in terms of promoting development in traditional communities. On the next slide, we're looking at the issue of provision of tools of trade. We've just come out of the establishment of new houses, provincial houses, and we're saying that we have to work with all the provinces where there are houses of traditional and Khoisan leadership. So it's basically all the provinces except the Western Cape, which has not as yet established a provincial house, as well as Gauteng, where there's only two senior traditional leaders recognized. So the two senior traditional leaders work more with the national house. So they basically then have seven provincial houses of traditional and Khoisan.
Can you repeat that? Why not Western Cape?
The houses have to be established based on the recognized traditional leadership in the province. So Western Cape does not have any recognized traditional leadership at the moment. What might lead to the establishment of a house in the Western Cape is the process that is now evolving on the recognition of Khoisan leaders. But there's a commission that has been established that is considering applications for recognition, and once there are Khoisan leaders recognized in the Western Cape, then together they can then work with the provincial government to establish a provincial house. But as it stands, there isn't a single traditional leader recognized in terms of the law in the Western Cape. So given that we've got these houses and newly established following the expiry of the term of office around May last year of the previous houses, a very critical step is to make sure that working with the provinces, they get provided with all the tools and training that they need for them to fulfill their responsibilities. And there's a draft guide that we have developed, which we have discussed with MECs at MINMEC. And we are saying that there are particular aspects of it that must just be implemented to make sure that the members of those houses get the support that they require to play their role. And of course, on the next slide, we are doing the same because we've got a new, we've got a national house of traditional and Khoisan leadership, which also got established in October last year. It is our responsibility to ensure that in line with the handbook, the draft handbook, that they get them make sure that they get provided with all the tools of trade that they need. We are taking this a little bit further, Honorable Chairperson. We are saying that those traditional leaders who participate in local, in municipalities in terms of Section 81 of the Municipal Structures Act, as tools of trade get provided to the councillors themselves, that the traditional leaders who are participating in those municipalities should also be provided with the tools of trade, otherwise they will not be able to participate actively in municipal governance if they do not receive the tools of trade that they, that they need. So these are the outputs, the outcomes and indicators and targets that that we've got, Honorable Chair. Perhaps then just to indicate in terms of the allocation itself of the budget. So this is the total budget of the department. If we look at the extreme right column at the top where it says MTF estimates, so the first column of that 2023-24 looks at the current indicative allocation by Treasury, and then it goes to 24-25, and then the outer year of 2025-26. So honourable members will see that the total budget at the bottom of the column for 23-24 is 193 million, just over 193 million. That then goes up to just over 209 million in the outer year of 2025-2026. The slide also shows a breakdown in terms of how much goes to compensation of employees, goods and services, transfers and subsidies and so on. But I would just wish to draw the attention of the members to the transfers and subsidies
part of that slide, which shows that for 2023-24, just over 47 million of that budget goes to transfers and stuff. Primarily as a transfer to the Sierra Rice Commission, who are part of our vote and get their transfer through us. So if you take out that transfer, that really slashes the budget of the department even further. In the next slide, we just also indicate that it's not just the Sierra Rice Commission. The Sierra Rice Commission gets a transfer, but we also have the National House, who, although they don't get a transfer, but then there has to be an allocation to particularly support their work, which is 224 million for 23-24. And then, of course, the Commission on Inquiry and Sun Matters, which also gets support from us with a budget of 16.9 million. So in that slide, we just indicate that if you look at the percentage of the appropriated budget that then goes to these entities, you're looking at about 46% during 2023-24, and then we show all the outer years, and then the rest is what the department is left with to do its work. So the next slide there just shows a split in terms of a pie chart to show how much goes in terms of economic classification, how much goes to goods and services, how much goes to compensation of employees, and so on. So this is the allocation, and therefore, if you look at what we say we'll be able to do during the course of the financial year, it has to be looked at against the envelope that has been provided, so that we are able to stay within that envelope. Honourable Chair, thank you very much for just recommending in the last slide to the committee that the committee notes and support this presentation.
Oh, all right, thank you very much. Let's take questions, observations, or comments from members. Where do I start? Start with Honourable Sheikh and Honourable Smith.
Thank you very much, Jefferson, and thanks for the presentation. Okay, I'll just go quickly into my questions so we don't waste much time. Just with regard to the Traditional Leaders and Khoisan Act implementation, you have mentioned some of the challenges around this, but perhaps if you could enlighten us even more in terms of the implementation, what the challenges are, but also the challenges or concerns with regard to the Khoisan leadership and establishment of that. Obviously, we would want to see some kind of traditional leadership in the Western Cape before our term ends. That's just an enlightenment. Chair, the second thing is with regard to the safe initiation practices. When you say 20% reduction in illegal initiation schools, I mean, what do you mean? What are we looking at in terms of illegal initiation schools? And when you say 20%, what does that indicator actually imply? And then lastly, with regard to the assessment of the 10 traditional mining communities in terms of the social labor plans. Yeah, Chair, this one, if we can get a breakdown in terms of which 10 areas are you focusing on, which provinces or which, yeah, etc. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honorable Maleba.
Thank you, Chairperson. I don't have a question. My question was already addressed by Honorable
Barnenhorst.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the presentation. Just another concern is the split in allocation of salaries in that department. It's extremely high. It's 50% of the total budget, which is concerning. With regards to the mitigation of illegal schools, from my understanding, many of the initiations take place during the summer months, October, November, December, and a lot of these initiations take place in areas that are protected by the Veld and Forest Fire Act, which states you can't make open fires during certain times of the year. And I understand that part of the initiation process includes making of open fires. So how does the department assist local municipalities in accommodating this issue? Because it will open up a municipality for negligence and fruitless and wasteful expenditures should a fire occur in that area under the municipality's jurisdiction while this initiation school taking place. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honorable Smith.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, my first question to the department will be, in terms of, as we know, there's conflict amongst leaders in terms of who is the actual traditional leader. And that is causing a lot of havoc in tribal areas or traditional areas. And I don't know how this matter is actually handled, because you know the thing that we each time hear from these contradicting individuals is that it is politically driven by a specific, you know, and somebody's pushed forward. So what frameworks are there in place to ensure that, you know, there's not political interference in this, but that it is actually handled correctly in terms of who is the correct tribal leader and you know, making sure that there's a line of succession, because I think that's where the problem comes in, is that that process is not clear. Now the department can assist to clear that out for the future. Then the second question I have is in terms of the sale of land by tribal leaders, you know, Ndunas and Khoshis, they go and sell land. What systems are in place to audit that money? Because in essence, that land that's being sold belongs to that entire community. Although the land is currently registered in most cases in the name of government, but that land is now sold, a piece of land, you know, and that can vary from 2,000 rand to 5 to 10,000 rand a stand. How is that funds being regulated? Where's the accountability system to make sure that there is accountability for that? And that money don't land in one person's pocket, but is actually benefiting the entire community. The third question I have is in terms of the conflict between local municipalities and tribal leaders in terms of setting out new residential areas without having any consultation or engagement with a municipality to ensure that the basic infrastructure is in place and the capability are there to provide those services, water, electricity, sewer systems, roads, street lights, you know, or polo lights or whatever is relevant there. Because there's a total disjunction, and it is creating extra strain on municipalities, and it doesn't seem like there's a solution. So what is the solution, Minister, in terms of solving this problem? Thank you.
So thank you very much, Honorable Smith. Just some few issues from my side. Minister, this year when we had our own strategic plan as a committee, we did emphasize the fact that we want to pay more attention to this area, because we have not attended to it as we should. And during March, when the president held a summit with the traditional leaders, we sent about seven members of this committee to to be part of that important occasion so that we really understand what are the issues at play. And when we interact with this area, which focus area we must look at. I must just say that some members of my committee were not happy after that meeting. They feel that they were not recognized in a proper way, like the National Assembly was recognized. I said, no, this is a matter that we will discuss, and we will, as the NCO, will fight for our space, and we continue to do that, because this particular area of work is quite important. Now, with regard to the APP as it is presented here this afternoon, I get a sense that there are areas that are important that were not covered in this presentation, and they were raised as important areas in that particular summit. For example, in your presentation, you only deal with tools of trade for the Khoisan traditional leaders, as I understand. But it was a matter that was sharply raised by traditional affairs to say the issue of tools of trade for us is quite important, and it must be formalized and be made uniform. And I would like to invite your comment on that in terms of how we are going to deal with that. The second issue is that there are two research reports which identified the gaps in the existing policies, and how are we going to ensure that we implement the recommendations from those research reports. Number three, yes, I think we did well. This, what you call the term of Parliament, we have passed three pieces of legislation around traditional affairs. And for me, this is an important milestone, because most of them were long overdue. We passed the traditional courts bill. We don't know what is happening with that. After we toiled and ensured that it's in place, it is not yet assented into a legislation so that it gets implemented. Maybe you can respond on how, why, what is happening and what causes the delay. The second one, and I'm happy that you spoke a lot about how you must put up the systems in place in respect of the Traditional and Khoisan Leadership Act to implement that legislation. The work that you are doing, for me, is welcomed. In terms of the customary initiation law, I hear you talking only about the schools that are illegal operating in that sense. But my view is that there are some issues that are important as well that needs to be covered in this particular respect. For example, injuries that occur, you only mentioned Uwer Tambo, but general injuries that occur in those schools. There are issues, serious issues of kidnappings and abductions in those particular traditional schools. And other people say people are also being amputated. I'm not sure how true is that, but these are the issues that would like the department to deal with. One of the key issues that was raised in that meeting was, and I don't want you to treat it as a by the way, traditional leaders were saying some councils where we operate inhibit us, they prevent us from participating in terms of Section 81 of the Municipal System, Municipal Structures Act. And my view is that they are not making those traditional leaders a favor. They, in terms of the law, they've got to participate, and they've got to be treated with respect as such, and be given the necessary tools of trade the same way that they treat their own councillors. For me, that is quite important. It must not be treated as an issue of by the way, it's a matter that is happening. In some of the councils in my province, they are prohibited from participating in terms of Section 81 of the Municipal Structures Act. They also indicated that they need to participate effectively, which in my view is very good. They want to participate on the issues of the IDP. It's important. They must participate in the issue of SDBIPs. It's very much important. They must also participate, and this is a matter that they raised, to participate in the municipal anti-corruption strategies. Our traditional leaders have got an important role to play, and I would like you to elevate it as you proceed forward. Lastly, I heard you say you want to establish the traditional and cohesion councils to operate, but we also have the traditional councils that are constituted by 40-60%. They need to be reconstituted, the current ones, if they are not, and there ought to be some processes that are unfolded. I want to invite your comment on that as well. Just quickly, if you can just respond to some of the issues, others that you cannot respond to, we need to find a way. But as I indicated, our focus is going to be also on the issues of traditional leadership, which are very, very much important. Yes, over to you, Raoul.
Sorry, Jay, yes, I forgot about a very important question, actually. In terms of the Kukumba house of the Nkuna royal family in, it's a very difficult name, Oksane Traditional Council in Mpumalanga, that lodged a dispute with the MEC in Mpumalanga. There's a few questions. Is when will this committee commence? Why did Kota and Mpumalanga choose to build tribal offices and put in the back foot of dispute that depending since 2022 February? And then the indication on this dispute with Mpumalanga government explicit as to whether or not they will create and solve this dispute. So that's a question that I received, and I'm just putting that to the minister also today. Thank you.
Okay, as you respond to that question, the other one that I omitted as well was the commission on the protection and promotion of culture, language, and linguistic communities. The reality in our country today is that there is a mushrooming of these religious fly-by-night churches. And for me, they are getting out of hand. I remember 2 years ago or so, there were some public hearings conducted by the commission to check the extent of this. But the fact of the matter is that this, in some instances, have tend to be a roping business, a fly-by-night business where people are being literally taken for a ride. And I would like the commission to really focus on, I don't know how, but whether it is to regulate or to find a way in which there could be some accreditation of this religious churches that are mushrooming, and that creates a problem. And we all know some of the practices that they perpetuate in the process. They are uncultured, they are uncivilized, some of them are immoral, and they border on criminality. And I don't know, I would like to hear what you've got to say on that in terms of putting some measures to attend to this, because this is one other area that we think is a specific focus. Over to you, can I respond? DM, I don't know whether must I give the DG or you? Okay, fine, no problem. DG?
Thanks, Honourable Chair, to the Honourable Members for the questions. I will, as you advise, Chairperson, just touch on a few of them. Others will just have to see how we can then provide detailed information For example, the Honourable Smith raised a question specific to a senior traditional leadership in Mpumalanga. So because in terms of the law, they get dealt with at provincial level. They don't necessarily get escalated to unless the kinship. So what we will commit to do is to make sure that we collate all the information that the Honourable Member has asked for through interaction with our counterparts in the province, so that the information can be provided to the Honourable Member. And on the Sierra Rights Commission, Honourable Chair, in fact, after those hearings, they produced the report, which came to Parliament. But unfortunately, I think there wasn't agreement in terms of how that report should be taken forward, because it contains specific proposals on accreditation and so on and so on. So I think it is the recommendations contained in that report that at the time of processing, there wasn't agreement when it was tabled at the level of the portfolio committee. But I would recommend, because they are a Chapter 9 body, independent reporting to Parliament directly, that it might just be a matter that the committee might want to engage with them directly on, so that we are not seen to be speaking on behalf of a Chapter 9 constitutional body. Perhaps also just to add on the issue of land, and I would like to link it to the issue of constitution of traditional councils, because a lot of our traditional councils have not been constituted in terms of the law. So that's why even when they get taken to court, they lose. There are specific examples in Limpopo where people occupied land. When the council took them to court, the court ruled that, but you have not been legally established as a traditional council, so you have no jurisdiction whatsoever. The senior traditional leader is recognized in terms of the law, but the council itself is not recognized. It has not been established in terms of the law, which makes it then difficult when it comes to the issue of custodianship over land, because it means that in the absence of a traditional council, there are a lot of things that will happen, but there is no institutional arrangement to ensure the kind of accountability that the Honourable Smith is talking about. To say if it's not really selling, it's not really selling of land, it's permission to occupy, because ultimately there is no ownership where communal land is concerned. Yes, there is money that goes to whoever is making the land available, but in the absence of proper institutional arrangement through the constitution of the legal structures of traditional councils, then it becomes difficult. But I think also it should also be remembered that part of the problem that our traditional leaders have been having with Spluma is that they say it does not recognize their existence. So whatever structures are provided for in Spluma, there is no reference at all to traditional leaders. And they were saying, but Spluma is supposed to apply to communal land as well, but we seem not to exist insofar as Pluma is concerned. But this is the matter that was discussed thoroughly through at the land summit that was held in May last year, organized by then Deputy President. And there was agreement that the Department of Agriculture, Land Reform and Rural Development will run a process of a review of Pluma in consultation with the houses. So those consultations have started. They've already engaged with the National House. They are now going to provinces, and at the later stage, they'll go to the local houses as well to get the views of traditional leaders as members of houses around how Spluma should be reviewed, so that it can this concern that they have can be addressed. Maybe just two other questions. I think the one on the 10 communities, Honourable Sheikh, we were looking at the three provinces of Northern Cape, Northwest, and Limpopo. But we then said in discussions with the Department of Mineral Resources and Energy, we will then agree on the specific communities based on their experiences, but also in consultation with the Houses of Traditional and Western Leadership as well. The last two, just to touch on, Honourable Chairperson, you raised the issue of issues emanating from the dialogue that the President presided over. So there's quite a number of issues that were discussed there. And so there's a process through the interministerial task team that the Deputy President is chairing, and the new Deputy President is facilitating that process now, to make sure that we work as a collective with other ministers that whose areas of responsibility impact on the issues that were raised by traditional leadership. So that work is being pursued through that interministerial task team, which looks at a number of things. Honourable Chair, you've just given two examples, but there's a range of issues that they've raised. The traditional cause bill is actually one of the issues, but our understanding is that it is still with the presidency. We did inquire with the presidency. They said it's still under consideration. And once it has been duly considered, then there will be a decision that is made in that regard. But of course, there are a number of other issues that are raised as part of that menu of things that are being addressed through the interministerial task team on traditional leaders. Perhaps just one last point to make, which relates to challenges relating to the TKLA. Yes, the one on constitution of the TCs has been one of them. Alongside that, of course, honourable members would be aware that there is a constitutional court challenge to the legislation, where the applicants are concerned that Parliament's public participation process was inadequate. So, of course, although there is no court ruling at the moment, but it's actually sending messages of uncertainty within the sector. We have a commission on Khoisan matters that is looking at applications for recognition now of Khoisan communities and leaders, and they keep saying to us, what will be the implication if the whole act is declared unconstitutional? Should we be continuing with the work that we are doing now? And we say, no, continue doing the work that you're doing, because there is no court ruling, there is no court decision at the moment. And I think the helpful thing about the application is that they are asking the court to, if the court declares it unconstitutional, but to suspend the unconstitutionality for a period of about 18 months, during which implementation can take place, but Parliament can be then given another opportunity look at where things might have gone wrong with the public participation processes. I think in the interest of time, Honourable Chair, let me pause here.
Thank you very much. Honourable Minister, I think thank you very much for what you did in that dialogue. It was very good, because and that shows how DTM can work and coordination. You brought all the necessary players, especially ministers, under one table. The only problem was lack of time. I think I wish that could be for 2 days or so that, you know, that accountability becomes there and there is sufficient time to engage with those issues, because those issues pertinently affect traditional leaders, and they've got to be addressed in that sense. And traditional leaders nowadays are clever. You don't just see an ordinary traditional, they are well read, they are studied, and most of them have studied law. They know what they're talking about, and they engage with issues in a very, very robust way, which is very good, because it makes government to stand up to really take all those issues that they raise very serious. And for me, I saw it as a very, very important platform. Thank you for that. Can you move to the last presentation, please?
Sorry, Chair, I've got a follow-up, because the answer that I got on the sale of land, so I want to understand it correctly. So the whole thing of selling that land is illegal. Is that what you say? That it can't happen because it's being sold? I mean, there's tax implications, all of that. So is there any compliance around that? Is there any regulation around that? So if it's illegal, I need to understand it as such. So I need a very clear answer on that specific point.
Do you want to respond to it now? Or what do you... Yes, just quickly.
Yes, I mean, I think we can put our heads together with our counterparts in agriculture, land reform and rural development, because our understanding is that for communal land, the person who actually officially holds the authority is the Minister of Agriculture, Land Reform and Rural Development. And what they can do at best in those areas is to give you a permission, PTO, permission to occupy. You are not owning the land. You are not owning the land. The land still belongs to the community. That's why even for residential purposes, when I go to the traditional leaders, they will say, we are signing this land to you. But then they will say, as an act of gratitude, are you going to give us 50 rands or 100 rands? And so, but there isn't any particular guidance as to how much it should be. But then that money should actually be going to the traditional council to help the traditional council then fulfill other responsibilities and so on. But if the traditional council is not legally constituted, which is why I keep connecting it to the ADA activity of making sure that traditional councils are legally constituted. But I think in terms of legalities and so on and so on, I think we'll have to test that with our counterparts in the Department of Agriculture, Land Reform and Rural Development, because our understanding is that it is at the level of allowing you to occupy it but not to own it, and so it cannot be sold.
I need to get very clear clarity on that. I think
yes,
it's very important.
I want to make a proposal on that.
Yes.
I propose that compose a question
okay.
directly to them
okay.
in a proper way, seeking all okay. the answers that you need, and then they will formally respond, because as I understand, it's a legal matter, it involves a lot of things, and actually we are putting him under the corner. Because you see, saying this on record in Parliament, and the next thing we said, he said this, and which is not okay. Can I say that we ignore everything that you said in that sense to protect you, by the way, and that the question will come, and then you'll formally respond to that question after you've done your own investigations. Is that okay? Okay. I think it's fair to everybody. Yes. Let's go to the last one.
Thank you very much, Chair. Good afternoon to yourself, to the members, the Honourable Minister, Deputy Minister, and colleagues. I'm not sure why the presentation has not been put up. I would appreciate if it can be put up on the screen so that as I go
through. Operated from the side.
I thought there was somebody who was
yes,
sitting there.
Yes, then let them do that.
Okay. I'll take the same.
In the meantime,
I'm proceeding, Chair. So I'll go through the entire presentation and not allow the different program heads to present. So basically, the purpose is to present our APP and review the strategic plan to the committee. And I will not dwell on the mission and vision and values of MISA, which I believe that the members can actually look at their own leisure. But what I'd like to maybe take a bit of time on is on the mandate of MISA, that perhaps maybe the members can also reflect on what the mandate is. And it's primarily to render technical advice and support to municipalities by undertaking broad functions, including effective infrastructure planning to achieve sustainable service delivery, to support municipalities through the implementation of their projects as determined by their IDPs, as well as to support municipalities with operations and maintenance, which is quite critical because a lot of infrastructure is collapsing as a result of neglect and not undertaking proper operations and maintenance. And also, most importantly, is building capacity of municipalities so that they can effectively plan, deliver, operate, and maintain their infrastructure. So basically, that's the mandate. I just thought we can just reflect on that. I won't go through the slides that talk to the revised strat plan. We have revised our strat plan in accordance to the MTSF revisions as well. So I would suggest that we go to the slide that then talks to our APP, which is slide number 14 in the presentation. But just as a summary of our APP is that we've got three programs in MISA, that's administration, technical support services, as well as infrastructure delivery management support. And we have a total of 22 output indicators that are directly linked to the MTSF outcomes. So program one, in the next slide, is administration. So administration is primarily focusing on corporate support services within the institution, as well as financial management. So it primarily ensures effective leadership, strategic management, admin support to BISA. And you've got three sub-programs under program one, which I will not go into detail on.
And as I've indicated, we've got three output indicators, which are quite standard and also common, as the other two departments have presented. So for a capable and ethical government, we've got an indicator that focuses on the implementation of our ethics management plan, and then secondly, implementation of our corporate services improvement plan. Then for our financial indicator, which is linked to the outcome of a functional, efficient, and integrated government, we have one indicator that looks at achieving an unqualified audit opinion on our financial statements. So basically, when we receive an unqualified or a clean audit, it then covers the entire value chain of financial management in the institution. So the budget allocated for Program 1, as you can see on the slide, Chair, is that for the three financial years, which is the NTSF period, we have an allocation of 112 million and then slightly growing to 116 and then ultimately 121 in the outer year. And most of it, as you can see, goes to compensation of employees as well as goods and services, because this is where we do a lot of procurement in terms of office space, ICT equipment, and so on. So the second program, which is one of our core programs in NISA, is technical support services, which has got a purpose of enhancing capabilities of municipalities for improved infrastructure planning, delivery operations, and maintenance. There are three sub-programs, which I will not go into detail on, but it's mainly to conduct infrastructure assessment and analysis so that we can get a sense of the state of the infrastructure that is existing in municipalities. And I think one member earlier asked about whether we know what the state of the infrastructure is and whether municipalities have got the capability to get that infrastructure to full functionality. And then the second sub-program is infrastructure delivery maintenance and stakeholder coordination. So this is the sub-program that hosts the 9 NISA provincial offices that we have in the provinces, where we've got all our technical support, our technical experts in the form of engineers, town and regional planners, young graduates, and so on. So these teams are the ones that are working closely with provincial cocktail departments and municipalities to actually get them to improve their infrastructure delivery and ultimately improve and enhance service delivery. Technical skills, as a sub-program under technical support services, focuses mainly on strengthening the capacity of municipalities. So we've got a range of programs that we implement as NISA to build and develop the capacity within municipalities. That includes also artisan programs, recognition of prior learning, young graduates, and so on. So in terms of the output indicators for technical support services, I will not go into detail. But the first one is on reducing the non-revenue water in dysfunctional municipalities. So throughout our APP, you'll realize that we are referring to dysfunctional municipalities, because as a cocktail family, we then resolve that our focus for the current financial year will be on the dysfunctional municipalities. There are 66 of them, but out of the 66, then we're focusing on the 22, which are the west of the dysfunctional municipalities. So non-revenue water is contributing largely to revenue enhancement in municipalities. So there are technical and commercial losses. So as NISA, we will be providing support to those municipalities to address non-revenue water, specifically the technical losses, by an average of 5%. And then in terms of job creation, because one of the contributions we have to make, as indicated in the MTSF, is that we need to contribute towards job creation through infrastructure. So we will be supporting municipalities to achieve the EPWP job opportunities through mainstreaming of labor-intensive construction. So we are targeting 25 municipalities. The number could be more, but for this financial year, these are the 25 municipalities are the ones that we have started supporting in the previous financial years to ramp up infrastructure development using labor-intensive construction. And then in the next slide, that talks to a specially just and transformed national space, similar to what... I think I skipped a slide on MIG. So So MIG, which is also a challenge that some of the members has raised in terms of the expenditure thereof, and whether the MIG is actually sufficient, and how much of this MIG goes unspent by municipalities. So as NISA, we have a target to support 10 municipalities. Firstly, to utilize a portion of the MIG for repairs and maintenance. So municipalities have got an opportunity to utilize 5% for infrastructure planning, as well as 10% for actual repairs and maintenance. And the member asked earlier if this is only limited to urban areas, and the answer is no. Municipalities can actually utilize this for both urban and rural areas, so it does not limit municipalities in terms of where exactly to use this 10% for repairs and maintenance. So we will be focusing on 10 municipalities. The uptake for this opportunity has been very low, and our intention is to actually support these 10 municipalities and so that we can also be able to use it as a benchmark and best practices for more municipalities to utilize a portion of their grant for repairs and maintenance. And then in terms of expenditure, I think similar to what our parent department, DCOG, has, that we want to achieve 85% expenditure on MIG. And I always emphasize that for me, it's not only about the expenditure levels, but it's also about the value that is coming out of that MIG that's been spent on infrastructure. So the targets are there, and they're in line with the municipal as well as our national financial list, which is 60% by the end of the 31st of March for ourselves, and then 85% of expenditure by the end of the municipal financial year. And then moving to the next one, as I was indicating, this is also responding to the spatially just and transformed national space, that we need municipalities to have spatial plans that are compliant fully with SPLUMA, and that we're identifying 15 dysfunctional municipalities. And what we are emphasizing through this process also touches on the previous discussion about the involvement of traditional leaders in these processes. So we'll be working very closely with the with traditional leadership to ensure that they also meaningfully participate in having these spatially compliant plans. And then in terms of increase to access to basic services, so our focus is on access to water supply, access to energy, as well as access to sanitation, as well as access to proper roads. We have indicators, and we are targeting a 3% increase in households that will receive access to water in the 22 municipalities. And then on issues of functionality of infrastructure, I think earlier there was also a question about whether we know how many of the infrastructure that municipality has is at the functional stage. And we did an analysis as MISA, and then this then gave rise to this output indicator that we've got a number of dysfunctional water services, no, water treatments as well as wastewater treatments in the majority of our water service authorities. So we have a target to support the 22 dysfunctional water service authorities specifically to get those water services, those water and wastewater treatment works to a level of improvement such that there can be improved access to both water as well as sanitation services. I've spoken to access to electricity supply, and for that one we've got two indicators. Firstly, to increase the access of households, increase the number of households with access, and then secondly, to contribute towards the reduction in electricity demand. That will also, to a large extent, contribute towards the challenge of load shedding. So right across, we are targeting the 22 dysfunctional municipalities, as I've indicated. Now also coming to waste as a basic service, we are also targeting the same 22 municipalities to improve access to household solid waste removal services, and we are targeting 2% increase in those 22 municipalities. And then in terms of the improvement in roads maintenance, as Chairperson said earlier, the town where he comes from is one of the towns that has got the worst potholes in the country. And what we have then done is we have identified the municipalities that we'll be supporting for this financial year, and the target is that 100 kilometers of roads should at least be maintained, which will include patching of potholes, dealing with issues of stormwater drainage and so on. And then the next one is the technical capacity development. As I've indicated, that we have quite a number of programs where we'll be supporting the 22 municipalities to improve technical skills such that there can be an improvement ultimately in infrastructure development and service delivery. And then in terms of climate change, we also have a responsibility and an obligation as MISA to support municipalities to plan the infrastructure such that it is resilient to climate change. And specifically, we are looking at flood risk resilience for the current financial year. And we've identified 10 municipalities, and these 10 municipalities are basically located in those provinces that are most prone to floods. So this is the budget for technical support services. It's actually the largest program within MISA. You can see the three-year allocations, 220, slightly growing to 227, and then ultimately 237 in the outer year. And then the last program, which is Program 3, Infrastructure Delivery Management Support, which primarily looks at efficiencies and effectiveness of program and project delivery within MISA, thereby supporting municipalities also to improve their project and program management capabilities. We are also focusing on supporting municipalities with infrastructure procurement, which has been seen to be one of the contributory factors to municipalities not spending that infrastructure grants in accordance to legislation, as well as infrastructure financing, noting that our national fiscus is shrinking, so we have to explore innovative and alternative means of raising capital for municipalities to be able to invest more in infrastructure. So the next slide will then talk to the indicators in Program 3. The first one, as I've indicated, infrastructure procurement, where we'll be supporting the 22 municipalities to improve the infrastructure procurement practices and also looking at different procurement strategies that are in line with legislation. And then the second one is on the Eastern Seaboard Development Project, which is an initiative that came out of a pronouncement in the State of the Nation Address in 2019 to build new resilient cities, smart cities, that would then address the spatial injustices of the past. So we are in the process of planning towards the Eastern Seaboard. This is an area located in Eastern Cape and KZN. DG Dipofa mentioned that the four districts that will be hosting this Eastern Seaboard development. So for this financial year, primarily what we'll be doing is master planning, conducting feasibility studies that will then inform the shape and the form of how that area will be developed. We'll also be identifying catalytic projects mainly that will talk to the infrastructure requirements in that area. And then the next one is linked to the outcome of the DDM, where we as MISA have identified, have actually set ourselves a target of supporting 10 district and metro spaces with the identification of infrastructure interventions. So basically what DDM is emphasizing is the need to bring together all the players in the service delivery space. So for MISA, it will be specifically on infrastructure delivery. So we'll be coordinating different stakeholders, both in the government and outside of government, because the private sector also has got an appetite to work with government to improve service delivery in municipalities. And then the last one is on access to funding. So we'll be embarking on a program to leverage to utilize the existing grants that municipalities have to unlock private sector investment. As I've indicated, there is an interest and an appetite. It's just a matter of us then supporting the municipalities to access all this funding that is available in commercial banks, in development funding institutions, and even in government through the different grants that are existing. So the last, let's go to the last slide that then talks about the overall resource allocation. So this is the budget, the 3-year budget for MISA. You can see that for the current financial year, our allocation is 351, and then it slightly grows to 367, and then eventually in the last outer year, we have an allocation of 383. Most of our budget in terms of classification goes to, if you can go to the next slide, if it's there, or no, it doesn't. It's on compensation of employees. And the question might arise, but why are we spending so much on compensation of employees? It's because of the technical resources, the experts that I've indicated. We've got over 100 civil engineers, town and regional planners that we deploy to municipalities to provide that hands-on support. That is why you see how our budget is mostly geared towards compensation of employees. And that, Chairperson and members, is the end of our presentation. That our revised state plan and the APP for the current financial year be noted. Thank you very much.
Right, thank you very much. That was MISA in terms of its three programs. Yeah, that is that. Can I invite questions and comments from members? I start with you, Honorable Smith, followed by Honorable Badenhorst, and take it from there. How about? Okay.
Thank you, Jay. May I proceed? Thank you, Jay. I've learned something new now. I never knew what MISA was. I apologize. But I Googled you.
Really?
I Googled you. And, yeah, it's the mission of the Municipal Infrastructure Support Agent, MISA, is to provide support and develop technical capacity towards sustained, accelerated municipal infrastructure and service delivery, which is a mouthful. But one thing I didn't pick up in your presentation, if I may, is I didn't see what MISA does in the municipalities where they go and assist to ensure that the senior management directors at those municipalities who are employed to do certain functions are adequately capacitated to fulfill their functions. Because if MISA just comes in with a load of engineers and fix a road, that road won't be maintained because the municipality doesn't have the capacity with regards to adequately qualified staff to continue maintaining the infrastructure. So I didn't see that in the presentation, and I apologize if I missed that. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much. Any question on Honorable Zamai?
No, Chair, I'm covered. I'm worried because I was outside when you were dealing with the issue of the land. As I know that most of our people...
It's only infrastructure, not the land.
No, I said I'm worried of that.
Oh,
because
yeah.
I went out. Because our people, they need land. But next time I will carry on it. Thank you.
Land first. All shall follow. Okay. Any other
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I don't have a specific question, but maybe just a broader question, especially with regard to the good work that is done by MISA, and I just want to know that in terms of trying to support municipalities that is within their mandate, do they have challenges with regard to capacity, be it personnel, be it the necessary skills or expertise, and also the budget? Thanks, Chair.
Some few questions from my side. One, when you assist municipalities, do you experience any problems of resistance because you bring in the skills that are required, and they either some of them don't have, or they don't want to assist you. They don't want your assistance. Do you encounter such kind of problems? Secondly, you do infrastructure analysis and planning. Do you have reports of all municipalities in terms of their current state of affairs in respect to infrastructure. And thirdly, linked to what Honorable Sheikh is asking you, your capacity. How many people do you employ at the level of MISA? You can also share with us, because most of the work that you do is engineering. Are women present, and they do a splendid job in terms of their work? In terms of their work, and not necessarily that they can't, it's engineering, and women need to be supported, those who are weak, and those who excel need to help others. That's the context in which I'm asking the question, because that is very much important. If you can get responses to those questions, you want to, Honorable Sheikh, once you make a follow-up?
Chief, you can remove those who are weak.
Problems are all over, and I'm not singling them out, because I think women can do the job. We've got good, solid engineers who are women in this country, and they need to be applauded, and there ought to be programs that advance women further, so that they must pass us, actually. Yes, as men.
Thank you.
You want to come in?
Yes, I've got a question that came up now with, when the other members asked. In terms of how do you determine your priorities in terms of identifying? So to determine where do you actually need, where does that come from? So that I just understand in terms of where do you basically intervene to assist municipalities. So what is the whole process around that?
All right, those are the questions. Quick responses. Over to you, Acting CEO.
Thank you, Chair and members. I'll attempt to answer, and then where I fail, I'll reach out to my colleagues to fill in the gaps. And thank you, Honorable Smith, for Googling us. Yes, we Googling MISA.
Yes.
Oh, okay. It's a beauty lies in the hands. Yeah. MISA is actually 10 years old. It's turning 10 years old in June this year. So we have been an entity that's been around for quite some time. Perhaps you are not communicating enough the work that we do. But yes, we have been in existence for quite some time. And the question that you are asking about the capacitation of senior managers, and yes, it has actually been one of the problems linked to what Honorable Dodobi is raising, that when we send our technical teams to provide support to municipalities, the expectation from the municipalities is that the MISA employees do the actual work, and then the officials in the municipalities just sit back. And the minute we take out our resource, then the municipality almost collapses. So what we are infusing in is capacity building programs, as I've indicated, through skills transfer, that we have young graduate programs that intend to build and increase the pool of capacity, technical capacity in the local government space, such that they can be absorbed by municipalities. But over and above that, we also have a recognition of prior learning programs, where we provide the officials in municipalities working in infrastructure with training such that whatever developments that happen in the infrastructure space, they also get trained on that. But that is one of the challenges that we experience, Chair and members, of the sustainability of our programs. That is why we are infusing in capacity building over and above the hands-on support, that we don't just do it for you. We do it with you so that you can learn how to do it on your own. Honorable Mutsa, the question about land, I don't think it was necessarily directed to MISA, but it was just a general concern. Honorable Sheikh,
asked the question about whether we have challenges on capacity, and the answer is yes. We do have technical resources at our disposal, but they are not enough to meet the demand and the need in the municipalities. We've got 257 municipalities, and unfortunately, with the plus minus 100 experts that we have countrywide, we're not able to reach out to all the municipalities, and that we then resort to focusing on the weakest municipalities because we can't be in all municipalities. But as we can see now, the trend is that even metros need the support that we give to the smallest municipalities. So definitely, yes, we do need our resources to be considered, both in terms of the actual people, the engineers and the planners that we have. We need to have more of them if we are really to make a meaningful impact and difference in the space. Budget, yes, is also a constraint. I'm sure you have seen our budget allocation for the 3 years is just over 300 million, most of it going to compensation of employees. So we can do very little to do actual interventions other than just giving the technical support to municipalities. The problem is we do experience, Honorable Dodovu, and most of them are actually governance and politically related, that when we get into a municipality, there's changes, for example, in priorities. Projects get changed as leadership changes in municipalities. So this also delays even the implementation of programs through the MIG. And we find that the MIG goes unspent because of this instability in governance. Budgets, yes, municipalities are experiencing serious budget constraints. They don't have enough budgets to implement their programs. That's why we are introducing a program of helping them to look at alternatives and innovative ways of raising capital for infrastructure development. The infrastructure analysis report, I think, Honorable Chair, if you can allow us to then provide a written response on the infrastructure analysis that we have done, and how many people are employed by MISA, and the breakdown of gender and how they are doing. I don't have that response, that answer, in terms of how many engineers, for example, or town planners, but we do have a combination of both genders, and I believe they're all doing well. I'm not sure if you're saying the MISA officials not doing well or the municipal officials that are doing well, the female ones that are weak. We take everyone along. We build everyone's capacity. Those that are lacking, we put them in programs such that they can be improvement. How does MISA identify priorities? So we look at the weakest municipalities in terms of service delivery hotspots, municipalities that do not spend their infrastructure grants, municipalities there where, for example, we get a lot of service delivery protests and so on. So these are the municipalities that we identify. So basically we look at the most under-resourced municipalities where we deploy our support. As I've indicated, we can't be in all 257 municipalities, so we really limit ourselves to those that we believe need our support the most. Can I just
thank you very much.
Okay.
That's good. I want us to go back to cooperative governance. There are a lot of issues that are hanging. DG, yes, you prepare yourself to respond to those questions. Let me take the last hand. It's quite important.
Thank you, Chair. This question is specifically to the Minister on MISA. Why is MISA existing if the things they do are supposed to be done by district municipalities? Because district municipalities are written in our constitution. It exists there. So why are we creating a organ or organization to do the job of a leg of government or a part of government that is supposed to function? That is really concerning because, there's a lot of money. All those mayors and everybody, municipal managers and whatever is getting paid there. Now, we cannot expect one organization who's getting 300 million rand to do the job of district municipalities right through the country. So I'm really concerned about this concept. I understand that it is, you know, that there's a need for that, but it was supposed to be fixed in district municipalities instead of creating another organ separate from that that costs government even more money. With no disrespect to MISA, but I mean, it is, why are we having district municipalities? Is the question then at the end of the day. But it is written in our constitution, so we can't run away from the fact that they exist.
Honourable, do you think that question is fair to the minister? Because what you are saying, you say MISA exists. It's not supposed to be there because the districts are there. But the question is that MISA has been in place for 10 years.
I understand.
And as you know it, Honorable Brandenhaus underlined it. He said it's municipal infrastructure support agent. Support. It's an agency of government that supports municipalities from the infrastructure point of view. And some of these district councils that we're talking about, they are very weak, some of them. They themselves need support, and they themselves, some of them have been dissolved, if we think that capacity is at the level of the district. I'm just thinking aloud because we are here because we want to hear their APP, more than their philosophical establishment of and the rationale behind the establishment of the MISA. But if the minister wants to respond to that question, he can.
Chair, if
that.
I can
but I don't want us to put her into a corner on a matter that is.
Chair, if I can just respond to your comment now.
Yes.
It is exactly part of the APP because there's funds going from the department going to MISA. So it is important for us to address that. And the fact is, as Honourable Bodenhoff was surprised of the existence of MISA, so am I. I mean, I've been working in a municipality, I've never heard of that.
MISA?
So, yes, of MISA. I've never heard of it. I've never heard of it. So that's why I'm just as surprised as the Honourable Bodenhoff about it. So, yes, maybe communication and all of that. So if we talk about the existence of it, but yeah, I think I'm making that point that district municipalities are not functional, then we should look at that instead of creating an organ to do somebody else's work that's already getting paid for doing that.
Okay, in my point of view, it's okay if she wants to answer that, she can, but I feel that is an unfair question. MISA is well known, is sufficiently advertised itself. If you are in the municipality, you know that is an entity called MISA that supports infrastructure. Okay, we don't have more time. Minister, can you just maybe respond to on that?
No, well, the answer is very simple. It's Section 154 of the Constitution, which defines the reason for provincial and national government to support, capacitate, and assist municipalities in their fiduciary responsibility. So you could either do it by getting a consultant to come do it, or you can put, you'll still spend that 300 million or even more. In fact, if you really want to say in-house and institutional capacity is best when it's handled inside, I mean, there's quite a lot, they can give that detailed information of municipalities where they've walked in, assisted, and of course they've got to pull out because they're working in 257. Municipalities. I mean, the very same information that you will receive about the pilot of DDM in OR Tambo, district municipality, rural, no collection of revenue, almost close to none, even in their local municipalities. And what else in terms of even attraction of skills? The grading of those municipalities are low. They don't attract engineers. They don't attract chartered accountants to take care of those municipalities. As MISA fit in there, assist, hold those students by hand, ensure that they qualify. Sometimes place people who are within the MISA payroll in municipalities to ensure that we build that capacity and leave it at municipal level. So the support of municipalities, you could either do it in-house or out-house, but it's the constitution that mandates the two spheres that they must support and capacitate municipalities. And the minister then thought a formation of NISA, which I concur with him, is still a correct platform to support municipalities. So we can then unpack what we did in writing, of course, Chair, just in the past financial year, so that we don't load with paper. In the past financial year, what have we been able to, what did we receive, what did we do with it, in what municipality? And then we can take it from there. Thank you.
Okay. It's okay. I think what we will do, I think it's part of our program. MISA will have to come specifically and engage with us on a number of issues, and will identify key areas of work. And maybe part of what they can do is to share with us their own experiences in terms of their work in the last 10 years and the impact that they have made in respect of supporting infrastructure development, planning, and implementation at the municipal level. DG of Cooperative Governance, it will be a remiss of a massive proposal if I don't allow you to respond to those questions which were posed by some of the members via you, Minister.
The Minister has already done the division of work.
If you are satisfied, it's okay.
Yes, I think
because you remember the point is that there was a point that I said, oh, wait, you don't proceed in answering questions.
Yes.
Because we're eating the time of other departments. Yes. It is on those bases. Okay. If there is nothing, you are happy, I'll give over to the Minister to have some concluding remarks.
Well, there are specific questions that the Minister wanted us to comment on. We will ask Dr. Naidu to start with that question. I think there was a specific question that was directed to him, and then Dr. Stolle will also respond. There was a specific question about DDM as well that Mpo will respond to. But let's start with Dr. Naidu.
Thank you very much, DG. So there was a specific question or questions that was raised by Honorable Smith. And the first was relating to how are we going to deal with those municipalities that are financially viable, challenged. So during the presentation, I made mention of two specific interventions that we are looking at. The first was that we would, with more vigor, look at seeing how best we were able to cleanse and verify indigent registers. Secondly, the issue relating to data management and records management, apart from it being a finding that the Auditor General had picked up, we feel that having those two matters dealt with would go a long way in terms of ensuring financially viable municipalities. The third thing, and this was not mentioned in the presentation, was to see how best we were able to identify at least the top 100 debtors in municipalities, and together with support from provinces and revenue teams in municipalities, to see how best we were able to approach those top debtors with the view to ensuring that we do recover financial resources from that specific target group. The second matter raised by Honorable Smith related to accountability of councillors. So if members of parliament declare their interest, why then should local government not do that? So in fact, the Code of Conduct for councillors requires of councillors to do that. And how are we intervening? So in October, of last year, we had published regulations taking forth the requirement that councillors must declare gifts received over a certain value. But in addition to that, we're using the opportunity to also deal with the matter of unruly behavior in council, but also to deal with the matter relating to walkouts. So those regulations were published for comment in October, like I've indicated. And because of the interest shown on the draft, a lot of comments were received, incorporated to the draft, and that draft has been referred back to the State Law Advisor for vetting. It's where it is. We're waiting for the State Law Advisor to come back to us on the draft that we've submitted. And we're hoping that once that's done, it becomes regulations that we would publish for implementation. So another key factor that we've included in the regulation is the matter relating to voting at meetings. And you would know that in the Code of Conduct, either item 3 or 4, that says that if a councillor votes for something that is against the law, it's a breach of the code. And you would know that in the amendments that were introduced on the 1st of November 2021, it says if a councillor is in breach of the code of conduct, that councillor may be removed from office by the MEC. And if such happens, that councillor may not stand for office 2 years. So it's interventions that we're introducing in the regulations, and hopefully it will attend to some of the challenges that we do face there. The third matter raised was the decisions of the demarcation board and what role does the department play in that. So the demarcation board is a constitutional institution. They have their own legislation that they would need to deal with that guides the work that they do. And sections 21 and 26 of that Act provide for how notification is given and how they would make decisions. So it's something that is totally within the ambit of the board and something that we do not interfere with. But in addition to that, during the course of last year, we introduced the demarcation authority bill. It is a bill that has got a lot of changes, so much so that it will repeal the present legislation that we have, Section 27 of, or Act 27 of 1998. It was also published by the Portfolio Committee recently, with comments being invited, which closed at the end, I think it was the 10th of March. So it is a bill that will also come here. I believe it has been tagged as Section 76. So the challenges that one sees in the present legislation could of course be covered in that piece of legislation that is in Parliament. The matter relating to the delay, and it was raised by Honourable Motsamai as well as the Honourable Chairperson. So where we are in terms of the Intergovernmental Monitoring Support and Intervention Bill is that we're at the cusp of introducing that piece of legislation in Parliament. So it is at the last committee. It is at the Governance, State Capacity and Institutional Development Cabinet Committee. It was there in November of last year. It was referred back for further consultation, which we've undertaken, and we're taking it back to the committee. So at the next committee, we're hoping that the committee looks at the bill, and then if comfortable with the contents thereof, submits it to cabinet, and if cabinet is also happy with it, it would be submitted to parliament for further processing. There was an additional matter relating to the output of spatially just and transformed national space economy, and the concern that the way SDFs are developed presently, there's not significant or enough participation by traditional leaders. So SPLUMA, driven mostly by the Department of Agriculture.
Teacher, I beg your indulgence, Dr. Naidu. I get signals here from members. 2 o'clock, they've got to be in the house. It's half past, it's already more than half past one. And that the minister's got to close. I've got to do my remarks. And the way you answer in questions is like I said, please answer those that it will rain tomorrow if you don't respond to them. Those, only those that are urgent. Okay. The rest of the questions, I think it's okay. You can respond to them in writing. I'm sorry to say that, but I think let me just stop you there.
Thank you very much.
Yes. Over to you, Honourable Minister.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. And I know that there can never be sufficient time to engage Kofta family. It's quite a big portfolio and quite a number of areas of interest as well that Honourable Members correctly are seeking explanation. And Chair, commit ourselves as well to creating the time and make ourselves available at any given point that the committee would think it will be important to come and share the work with MISA with them. I've made that note, and I think we'll rely on your guidance and your secretariat in terms of the time, but I commit that we'll avail ourselves. Chair, the last parting comment I would like to make really on behalf of the department is that I noted quite a number of what, because of time, we couldn't be able to respond to, and that we'll say. But I also wanted to also highlight, because the matter kept on coming up, that it's as if the summit and the Indaba, the traditional Indaba, were just areas we talked and we are not at work. We will also, in the information that we'll be submitting, Mr. Mohale and Kevin could also bring through the summit resolutions and the progress that have been made and the status quo with regard to quite a number of issues, some similar to what members have raised. You cannot be able to put everything in the APP, and you cannot be able to put everything in your strategic plan, otherwise it will be carrying the entire department at a go. But there's quite a lot of work that is even happening outside what we will really be saying to the committee we must be measured on, and we will bring all that work just to make sure that we keep you in comfort the little that we can while we try to push the functionality of municipalities. And thank you very much for the opportunity this morning given to the DM and the team for showing up. Thank you.
All right, thank you very much. Just one last thing from me on our minister and Vizi. Please go and check section 48 of the Municipal Systems Act. It obligates the Minister of COCTA that annually they must present the state of local government to Parliament. Annually, Minister of Police presents a state of crime in South Africa to Parliament. That provision of the Act requires the Minister to do that. That will be the greatest achievement on our minister. I've been fighting this for 4 years, that you need to, that's law, you need to consolidate the state of municipalities annually and present that before the NCOP and the National Assembly. I propose that go and work out an approach on how to deliver this and be the first to present a fully fledged state of municipalities in South Africa. Maybe give you about 3 months or 3 or 6 months when work on that, and next time you must tell us that in implementing this piece of this section of the procedure of the Municipal Systems Act, this is what we are going to do. We think that annually in September we should present to Parliament the state of local government, and the minister must present it and share to South Africa the state of municipalities, which is factual and scientific with all the key parameters areas and indicators, not what people talk every day about what is happening in municipalities. And I want to be the first pioneers of that process. Start it for posterity, that the future will continue on the path that would have laid. I suggest that this is what we need to do going forward. With that, thank you very much. This was a very good meeting. We'll put up systems in place and ensure that we meet quite often. There are quite a number of issues that are hanging that needs to be followed up, and we'll do that to ensure that we follow them up. And as I said, thank you very much, Honorable Minister, with your team, and I think this indeed was a very, very useful and empowering process. With the information that you shared with us, we are truly empowered in terms of the work that we do. On that note, thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.